Today's episode of Ariel Helwani's MMA show contains explicit language that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA show!
In your life on this Monday, September 23rd, 2019. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Hope you're doing well. Happy fall to you. Today is the first day of fall 2019, and wouldn't you know it, here in beautiful and exotic Bristol, Connecticut, it's a balmy 90 degrees. I think that's like 33 Celsius. Incredible. Where else would you rather be than right here, right now? What an honor it is to be hosting this show for all of you on this great Monday afternoon. We've got so much to discuss. We're coming off an entertaining event in Mexico City this past Saturday. Unfortunately, it ended on a bit of a sour note, an ugly note. In case you missed it, Jeremy Stephens, Yair Rodriguez, main event. Everyone was looking forward to it. It was the people's main event. It was the main event. A lot at stake. It was Rodriguez's first time back in Mexico. First time headlining a show in Mexico. He had not fought there in around 4 years, and the fight lasts 15 seconds. Accidental eye poke. It seemed like Jeremy was trying very hard to fight through it. Herb Dean, the referee, who has been criticized all year long, and often rightfully so, I thought handled the situation very well. I thought he was on point. He was calm. He was collected. And Stevens just couldn't open his left eye. And since then, people have been criticizing Stevens and calling him a coward. This is a guy with like, 40 or so fights on his pro record. The guy who fights anyone, anywhere, anytime, sometimes to his detriment, and you're criticizing him, you're questioning his manhood, you're questioning his heart. It's a shameful situation. Even more shameful is the fact that he was showered by beer, by water, who knows what was thrown at him. People were coming down from the top of the stands at that arena in Mexico City to get a better look at him, to throw things at him. I hope those people on this Monday afternoon, Monday morning, I hope those people are embarrassed. I hope they are ashamed. I hope they are never allowed back at any UFC event. I hope they're never allowed back to that arena, because no athlete should be treated that way. No athlete, no fighter, no entertainer, no performer. Who are you to throw things? I know you're upset. Guess what? There were 11 other great fights on that card. You got your money's worth, all right? We know you're upset. The guy's not a coward. For people to throw, I'd never seen a scene like that. And we could split hairs all we want, 229. I have never seen a scene like that at a UFC event. That was disgusting. That was classless. That was shameful. That was pitiful. Use any adjective you want. I was embarrassed for those people, and I hope they're embarrassed of themselves. So Jeremy Stephens deserves better. Hopefully he's okay. Hopefully he's not too seriously injured, and hopefully we get that fight in the very near future. Hopefully they just run it back in a month or so, and we can find out who's the better man. I was looking forward to it. Jeremy Stephens told us last week that he spent 6 weeks in Mexico. He spent $30,000 on this training camp. You think he wanted this fight the last 15 seconds? You think he wanted to just get his show money? You think he was looking for a way out once he got to the cage? Come on. Use common sense. Just completely idiotic takes I see all day long. Enough of it. These are fighters. What do you think they're afraid of? They do this for a living. You think they're afraid? They're actually in the cage at this point. Oh, on second thought, I'd like a way out? Come on. Let's do better. So anyway, that was disappointing. But like I said, the rest of the card was great. Esparza Grasso, tremendous fight. The return of Brandon Moreno, tremendous fight. Irene Aldana looked tremendous. Steven Peterson, where did that come from? The seventh spinning backfist KO in UFC history? These are just some of the notable wins. Or results, I should say. Because there was a draw in there, Brandon Moreno, which I'd like to see again against Askar Askarov. So there was a lot to like there. Of course, last week as well, we had the UFC 244 press conference. Nathan Diaz, Jorge Masvidal. A lot of people thought it was a dud. A lot of people thought it didn't live up to the hype. Well, guess what? I told you, if you listen to the MMA reporters on Wednesday, that it was going to be just that. They're both counterpunchers when it comes to press conferences. They're both the kind of guy who likes to sit back, relax, and sort of react to the other. But in this case, when you have two guys who are sitting back and relaxing, you're not going to get a lot of fireworks, a lot of quotes. But you got Masvidal looking like that. You got the great scene behind us with the bridge. You got New York City. You got some questionable questions by media. And I see a lot of people criticizing the media, like, oh, do better. A lot of those people weren't real media. How about we criticize the people who let those people in? The UFC should do better. as far as who they let into these things. Now, New York, midweek, I get it. There's not a lot of MMA media there. It was what it was. Let's not get all crazy. It's going to be a great fight, November 2nd, and later today we're going to get a great interview from Jorge Masvidal. Let me run down today's lineup. So I'm getting all fired up. I'm looking forward to talking to our first guest of the day. This is one of my favorite lineups of the year, and I sense the excitement from all of you. I came into Bristol today fired up. I got a lot to say. My beloved Buffalo Bills are 3-0. What more can you like? I mean, really. Daniel Cormier is going to join us in his first interview since his loss at UFC 241. Is he going to keep on fighting? Is he going to fight Stipe Miocic? How is he feeling these days a month or so later? We'll find out from DC in his first interview. I sat down with Jorge Masvidal Thursday in New York City for an interview about his past, where he came from. I learned a lot about this man that I did not know before. We'll run that entire interview on this show. Trust me, it's a different look, a lot of interesting insight into the man they call Gamebred, the pride of the 305, Miami, Cuba, Orale. Yes. Anyway, Jack Hermansson is going to join us at 2:45. He headlines the UFC's debut in Denmark this Saturday. What a great card this is. Littered with names from top to bottom. Interesting fights, interesting personalities. Mark Madsen, an Olympic silver medalist, going to make his UFC debut. You've got the return of Nicholas Dalby. Jack Shore is on the card. Lando Venata, Mark J. Casey. There's a lot to like from this card Saturday afternoon. It's headlined by that man who goes up against Jared Cannonier. We'll talk to him. Joey Coco Diaz is going to join us. You're all very excited about this. He'll join us at around 2:20. Looking forward to catching up with him, talking to him. He's a huge MMA fan, a super fan from Cuba, and knows a lot about Masvidal, Romero, all those guys, but is just a big fan. You know about him. Immigrant mentality, the church of what's happening now, Joe Rogan podcast, all that stuff. Joey Diaz making his debut on the program. We'll talk to Martin Kampmann, the face of Danish MMA. For all those years, most wins as far as Danish fighters are concerned inside the octagon, 11 wins in the UFC. Haven't talked to him in a while. He's going to be a big part of the show this Saturday. We'll talk to him. Leon Edwards, where does he factor into the whole scenario? 170, we'll catch up with Rocky Edwards. Is he going to fight for the belt? Is he going to squeeze in there? Who the heck knows? And Jeremy Stevens will join us at 125, talk about his eye and what happened in that main event on Saturday. Do we have our first guest? Is she ready to go? Or okay. But first, let us go to the FaceTime machine or Skype machine? Oh, a FaceTime machine, and talk to our first guest of the day. She had a massive win on Saturday against Alexa Grasso. A lot of people are mean to her as well, but she deserved to win that fight 2-1. Great fight, great performance from Carla Esparza. She's kind enough to join us right now from, I believe, the airport in Mexico. Is that accurate, Carla?
Yes, I'm at the airport right now.
Well, I appreciate you doing this very much. Congratulations on the win. How are you feeling physically less than 48 hours later?
I mean, I've been better, but usually after every fight, I get banged up a little bit. My elbow's a little bit sore, but overall, I'm doing pretty good.
What exactly happened to the elbow? Like, what kind of injury did you sustain?
I didn't go and get x-rays or anything, MRI, but it's already feeling a lot better. I've been icing it. To me, I think maybe just kind of like a dislocation, I'm thinking, and just kind of like tight and sore right now. Nothing crazy. I know it looked pretty gnarly on the video, though.
Yeah, pretty gnarly. I mean, I think that's an understatement. It was shocking to watch. It reminded me, I don't know if you ever saw Benson Henderson versus Donald Cerrone 1, when Benson was like, Ben, that's where the Bendo name came from. That's what it reminded me of. Arms aren't supposed to bend that way. Could you tell us what is going through your mind when this is happening?
I knew it was sunken really tight, and I was just thinking like, oh my God, like, Should I tap? And I was like, no. Like, I was like, keep going, do something, move, like, try and wiggle out, like, try anything you can to, like, get out of this. And, fortunately, I was able to spin out, and it was still even locked in a little bit after I spun out, but I was able to get out, fortunately.
How close were you to tapping?
Like, super close. It was obviously locked in super tight. It, pulled my elbow out of its joint. So, yeah, I was close.
Have you ever felt anything like that before, even in practice? Roland, like, have you ever felt your arm bend like that and the feelings that come as a result?
No, never. I've never felt anything like that. But in the heat of the moment, the adrenaline with the fight and, just in a fight, in practice I always tap early, but in a fight it's just one of those things, like, you just kind of got to suck it up and, take it as it goes.
Did she surprise you in that third round? Because in addition to that, she really came on strong. Like, I think there's a case to be made that if this was a pride fight, maybe she would have won because they would score the end of the fight more so than the beginning of the fight. Did you think that she was going to come on, based on the first two rounds, did you think she was going to come on that strong in the third?
No, I didn't. I was really surprised. I think she knew that she was down two rounds, and she kind of had to give it everything and finish me in that third round. And she came pretty close a couple of times with strikes and with the submission. But yeah, I mean, the first two rounds were tough, but I felt like I had them, you know, for sure. And she just came like a storm that third round.
Did you think that they would score to draw? Did you think that she might have gotten a 10-8 in the third?
It's kind of hard to tell when you're really in the mix, you know? Like, she, especially in her hometown, I definitely could have seen it happening like that. But, like, she never actually knocked me down, even though she had me pretty close to out. So I was hoping not.
But you think decisively you won the first and second. Going into that third, you thought you had the first two down.
How I felt, yeah, but, you know, just being in someone else's hometown, you never know. But, like, I felt that I decisively won the first two rounds. You know, not by, like, the crazy margin that she won the third round. No, like, not at all. But I definitely felt like I won the first two.
What is it like as an athlete? You know, you fight your heart out, your arm bends that way, you're in pain, you're getting punched in the face in the third round, she's coming on strong, you do enough in the first two rounds, you win a fight on enemy territory, with the altitude, all that stuff, and then you have to deal with boos, you have to deal with people, like, disrespecting you, and like, you're having your moment, and you know that you're not the fan favorite in that case, but it's almost to the point where, like, you almost have to apologize. What is that like for you? What does that do for you afterwards?
Honestly, like, it kind of broke my heart because I've always been respectful. Alexa and I were respectful leading up to the fight. I've always kind of had the Mexican fan base, the Latin fan base behind me, and just, you know, just to hear them, like, so negative and booing me and not letting me talk, like, I just felt like, you know, just kind of disrespected and, you know, like, I didn't do anything wrong, you know, it was a bad feeling, for sure. I've never had anything like that in my career.
It's one of the most annoying things about close fights in mixed martial arts, when you have a situation where the fans may be upset with the judges, but they take it out on you in the post-fight interview, right? It makes no sense. And then you're left to deal with the heat. And from what I understand, like, I know it wasn't as bad as Jeremy Stevens, but did people throw things at you as well as you were leaving?
Yeah, like, I was trying to slow down a little bit to take a couple pictures with people I usually do and, you know, just say hi to people, but they were trying to rush me out of there, and on my way out, someone dumped, like, a whole cup of beer on top of me, and, you know, it was really sad, like, just to experience something like that. It was probably one of the low points in my career, and it was a really hard moment for me.
So you're walking out, and they poured beer on top of your head?
Yeah, it was, like, right before you go under the tunnel, like, some guy just, like, dumped, like, a whole thing on top of me. Like, one of the security was with me, Kenny, trying to, like, cover me and, like, you know, walk me out. And it was just, some of the fans were just pretty ruthless.
Were they yelling things at you as well as you were walking back?
Yeah, I mean, some of the fans were, like, being cool and wanting to take pictures, but some of them were just saying mean things and booing and, you know, and... Like you said, it's not my call, you know, and not that I actually felt that I did win the fight, but, you know, they can't take it on the fighters, because we're literally there just doing our job and giving it everything we have.
Did this kind of take away your joy, like a big win, like I said, enemy territory, like, did it not allow you to fully appreciate and enjoy the moment afterwards?
Yeah, honestly, when I went back to my locker room, I just felt really bummed out. I almost felt like just wanting to cry and just be sad, because, which is a crazy feeling after a win. You know, it's like I couldn't even enjoy it just because I'd, like, literally just been attacked, you know, and that's a hard feeling. Even though we get punched in the face every day, you know, it was hard to take in.
Did you see Alexa after the fight?
No, she kind of rushed off. Pretty fast after the decision. I wanted to shake her hand. You know, she was, like I said, nothing but respectful. I've had conversations with her. She's a totally nice girl. I haven't gotten to see her after the fight, no.
I was just wondering because she, I've seen her say in the post-fight scrum and on social media afterwards that she believes she won the fight, which she has every right to. But I wonder if you feel like you're not getting the credit that you deserve for that performance.
You know, I can see how she feels like that, especially when you have the crowd so hard behind you and kind of, you know, like saying, you know, that the decision was bad. But I think anyone who's kind of logical and, you know, actually knows about the sport, like, knows. I mean, I think she had to know she was down two rounds. And no matter how much you dominate that third round, you know, that's not enough sometimes.
How was dealing with the altitude? How was it fighting over there?
Man, it was a rough one. Even going up the stairs was kind of hard. But I was training at altitude for a month, and I was out in Mexico City for 2 weeks, so I feel that I made some good adjustments, but it definitely is hard to put that outfit out in the fight like you would at sea level for sure.
So considering that and also the fan reaction afterwards, do you have any interest in fighting in Mexico ever again?
You know, I definitely would love to fight out here because the fans are passionate. And like I said, I've had a lot of Mexican fans support me. But I definitely would not want to come out here and fight a Mexican fighter, like a local again. That's 100% no.
Just because they're very much against you in that regard, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even if I fought anyone else, I think I'd have a lot of support. But, you know, in that case, it was just, it's a rough one. Like, these fans back their fighters so much, which is an amazing thing, but it can also obviously be a bad thing if they, you know, take it overboard.
So that's now two wins in a row for you after the loss to Tatiana Suarez around a year or so ago. Did you do anything differently after that fight? Did you make any changes to get back on track here? Because that fight was your second loss in a row, so it seemed like, okay, everyone was talking about, all right, maybe we saw the best of Carlos Barza, but now all of a sudden, two very impressive victories, in my opinion. Did you change anything afterwards?
I actually changed a lot. Like, I'm really small for the division, so I changed my diet. I started, like, trying to put on muscle. I made a lot of adjustments in my training, like with my jiu-jitsu. I think a lot of people saw that I lost a couple fights off on my back or lost a couple rounds, and I made it a point to kind of make that, you know, be comfortable there, like just get comfortable being uncomfortable and make my weaknesses my strengths. And I feel like I made a lot of improvements since my losses.
Are you surprised that Zhang Weili is the champion of your weight class right now?
Not super surprised because I saw her fight in person. I saw her fight Tisha Torres in Vegas, and I was super impressed because I fought Tisha, and I know she's strong and she's a really good fighter. And Zhang has just been, you know, kind of seemed to come out of nowhere and just, you know, like a storm and just really dominate. And I think that's kind of the nature of our sport is you think you kind of know where everyone stands, and then boom, like someone flies out of nowhere, an up-and-comer, and just kind of takes over the division.
Do you suspect that she's going to go on a long run as champion, or do you think she's more of a flash in the pan?
With her performance, I could definitely see her being a champ for a while, but honestly, when I saw Jessica Andrade win, I was like, man, she's going to be champ for a while, and then boom, she gets, you know, knocked out in the first round, so you never know.
Right. When would you, like, if everything's okay with your arm, when would you like to return?
I would say maybe, like, I'd love to get on that December 30th Vegas card, or maybe, like, early, you know, January or something like that. That would be ideal for me, like, if I'm not hurt. Take a little bit of time off. I'm actually headed to Guatemala right now.
Oh.
Take a little vacation and then head back to training.
What are you doing in Guatemala? Just chilling out or something in particular?
I am going to climb a volcano, the Fuego, and I think the Acacatango volcano or something. So I'm going to spend the night up there. And fortunately, my arm's a little jacked up, but my legs are good. So I'm still good for climbing. So I'm really excited about that.
Wait, so it's still okay to climb with your arm like that?
I mean, I think so. Like, hopefully it's all legs.
I have concerns.
You know? Me
I mean,
too.
I'm not trying to doubt you, but, you know, it just seems like you might have a hard time gripping things, you know?
Yeah, hopefully I won't need to, like, crawl, because then I'm going to be kind of like, you know, like a one-legged dog. Like,
yes.
You know, limping, but, I mean, I think I can make it work. I think it's going to be all right. I'm pretty tough, so.
Now, please tell me you're going with someone, like you're going with a friend or something who's going to help you?
Yeah, I'm going with my boyfriend.
Okay, Luke. Good. Please take care of Carla, okay? do you have concerns that it's like legit, you know, injured or you tore a ligament or anything like that? What are you feeling right now?
Worst case scenario, I tore a ligament, but I mean, I'm not really in much pain unless I'm, you know, like, you know, bending or like super extending my elbow, and it's honestly feels a lot better than it did, the night of the fight. So, you know, I think it's going to be good.
Okay, and just curious, why didn't you go check it out? Like, why didn't you go to the hospital now in Mexico?
Because I think they were just going to do an x-ray. And, I mean, in all reality, like, I'm not going to get a surgery, like, you know, that night. And it's nothing that's really going to change. I know all I'm going to have to do is ice it. I've had many injuries over training this last, like, 15 years. So, you know, it's just one of those things. It's just time. And, you know, if I have a surgery that's needed, then I'll just handle it when I get back home.
Okay. And last thing, I've heard some people say maybe it's time now for a Carla Rose rematch. Maybe this is the right time. What are you thinking? Who do you want next? Do you like that idea? Anything else on your mind?
Like, through all my fights in my career, I think I've had, like, 23 fights, including my tough fights, maybe 24. I've never had a rematch, so I wouldn't mind a rematch with anyone. The rematch that I've called for a few times has been the one with Claudia. That's more of the one that I want, but honestly, I'm down for whoever. I always have been. I've never turned down a fight in my career, so whoever.
Because you think she greased in your fight, right?
Because what?
Because you think she greased in your fight, right? Claudia, didn't you think that she was greasing?
Oh, yeah. Nah, like, that was crazy. I still don't know, like, the details of it, and, like, obviously, like, she wouldn't say anything, but that was just... I've been wrestling for so long. I've been competing. Like, I know when someone's like sweaty, and I know the feeling. And my arms are just like slipping right off of there. Like, obviously, I regret. I wish I would have said something then, because it's just all hearsay now.
Yeah.
But you know, if that rematch were to happen, I would definitely be more vocal. And you know, it's out there now, so I don't think if that was the case, it would be the case again.
By the way, how's the cookie situation in Mexico? Did you have any good ones?
So far, I've only had one little set of galletas.
That's
but,
it?
I definitely need to grab some more. There's more like different types of pastries out here, like pan con dulce, and like different pastries and stuff are more popular out here. But trust me, I'm gonna get my cookies in.
All right. Well, the cookies are well deserved. Please be safe out there, okay? Don't do anything crazy. You got an injured arm. You were just in a great fight. Enjoy your vacation. Congratulations on a very impressive win. Congratulations on winning your first fight of the night bonus. I'm sure that helps a little bit as well. And looking forward to the next one.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you very much, Carla. Safe travels to you. There she is, Carla Esparza, the first ever UFC women's strawweight champion. Big win for her. Her first fight of the night bonus, her second performance bonus, a big fight for her on Saturday, big performance, 4 takedowns landed against Alexa Grasso, 33 takedowns landed overall in her UFC career. That is tied for most in the UFC women's strawweight division history. That's courtesy of ESPN Stats and Info Group, the great Andrew Davis providing us with our information each and every week on the program. So that was a big performance. That was a big win in the co-main event. In a matter of moments, we're going to be joined by Jeremy Stevens, who competed, of course, in the main event. As I said at the top of the show, an ugly scene afterwards. It lasted just 15 seconds. And there was an eye poke, maybe even 2 eye pokes. Herb Dean gave Jeremy Stevens a lot of time to recover. The doctors came in. The eye couldn't open. It appeared to be spasming. They called it off. The fans were very upset, throwing things at the cage, throwing things all over the place, throwing things at Jeremy Stevens, just completely ugly. He made a brief comment afterwards, courtesy of Karen Bryan. This is what Yair Rodriguez had to say at the post-fight scrum about the ending, the unfortunate ending to that main event.
I'm just going to give the benefit of the doubt to Jeremy Stevens, the only one who has to live with that in his mind, with that, I don't know how to say it, with that
doubt
in his mind. It's him, it's only him, you know? He's the only one who knows how it feels. You know, I have never been puked in the eye in a fight. But I have had a really bad eye. You know, in the Frankie Edgar fight, my eye was completely closed. You know, I couldn't see nothing, but I was willing to keep on going. You know, but not everybody's the same. I don't know how he was feeling, so complete benefit of the doubt to Jeremy Stevens, and, you know, let's see what happens. This is sad. This is sad.
Yeah.
You think I'm faking, bro? You're the one who poked me in the eye. Let's run it back 4 or 5 weeks, 2 weeks, whatever. I'll be ready. Just a deep scratch, deep bruise. You're the one who poked me. Let's run it back, let's go.
So that was the scene. Those were the words Saturday night from both Yair and Jeremy Stevens. You see the patch on Jeremy Stevens' left eye. And again, I understand why the fans were upset. That was the main event. I understand they wanted to see their guy, Yair Rodriguez, first main event in Mexico, hadn't fought in 10 months. Last time he fought, the amazing elbow. Like, there was a lot of excitement. It was, you know, it was a pretty well-attended event. I get where they're coming from. You can't act like that. And to be honest, I think a lot of that reaction did come as a result of Yair Rodriguez's reaction. I think he was very fired up. And again, understandably so. Hard for me to put myself in his shoes. So much pent up aggression and emotion and just like the nerves and all that stuff, that energy before a big fight. You could see he was emotional having his family there. He was amped up. He was excited. And then the whole thing last 15 seconds, you don't have an outlet. You don't have a way to get it all out. And so you're fired up. You're upset. You're heartbroken. You're mad. And so he was mad. And I think the fans saw him react that way. And then they reacted the way in which they did. And you saw him kind of, you know, step to Michael Bisping, and I think that brought him back to earth there, because Bisping did not flinch. Credit to him for doing that. So it was certainly an ugly scene. I really appreciate Jeremy Stevens taking out some time. I know a lot has happened in his life in the last 48 or so hours, and there he is, kind enough to join us via the magic of Skype. Jeremy, how are you doing, and most importantly, how are you feeling on this Monday afternoon?
Feel well rested. Just got home late last night, wake up in the morning and just grab a coffee and do the show.
How is your eye feeling?
Eye is good. You know, it was just a freak accident. Like, what happened in there? It was a scratch and a poke. You know, it is what it is.
I understand you went to the hospital afterwards, correct?
Yeah, correct. They went right to the emergency room. I didn't go to like any specialist, like eye doctor or anything like that. And yeah, they just rushed me right to the ER.
What did they say about the scratch and any kind of injury that you sustained?
Just I had two scratches on my eyes and just like a bruise, I guess, like a scratch and a bruise, laceration, I believe, is like what they called it. So nothing major, nothing permanently damaged. It was just a weird thing, you know.
And so right now, are you in pain, or does it hurt to like be in the sunlight? How does it feel?
No, I haven't really been in the sunlight. Just kind of keeping some shades on has been a thing. Other than that, you know, I had they patched my eye up. I didn't want anything like that or anything. You know, I was just laying, but they patched. You know, if you go to the doctor and your hand's messed up, they're of course they're gonna put you in a cast. They told me to keep the thing on for like 24 hours, and I just took the patch off, threw some glasses on, and all's good.
So, you know, they replayed the sequence a million times. It looked like he actually hit you in the right eye and then in the left eye as well. Is that what happened? Were you actually poked in both eyes?
Yeah, I was poked in both. You know, when I went back, my right eye was real stinging pretty bad. You know, there was a scratch on that eye as well. And it is what it is, you know. It was just a weird freak thing. You know, I just remember coming down like this Three Stooges, and you know, his fingers were in my face like this.
Do you think he did that on purpose?
No, of course not. You know, I've poked people in the eye before, kicked people in the nuts, you know, and I've been hit in the nuts. You know, I've had a broken eye orbital. against a badass in Donald Cerrone and was able to fight. You know, it was just one of them things where you get glazed, and it's an eye poke. You know, it's like a, I mean, it's almost like a paper cut, man. The shit hurts. You know, yeah. When it comes to your eyes, you know, your eyes are very sensitive. You know, you definitely need two eyes. I fought with a broken orbital, like I said, and you know that was painful, but I was able to see with a little bit of blurred vision. But and this one, it just grazed me right, you know, in both my eyes, actually. You know, your hands are supposed to be closed, you know, and it's just one of the things. And in the fight, we didn't even get started. You know, he threw like one kick, and you know, next thing you know, we're trying to exchange, and then bam, right in my eyes.
Which one hurt more, the right or the left?
The left hurt, you know. It's the left one was a lot more painful. The right one was just it was scratched, and I know, like, when I seen it, it was like, yeah, he got me there too. And I noticed that when I was trying to rinse off that my eyes were burning. Both my eyes were burning, but it was my left eye.
When you're in that situation, before they announce that the fight is off, you could tell, like, everyone's watching you, right? And you have your moment there with Herb Dean. The fight just started. The crowd is starting to lose patience. What kind of pressure is that on you? I feel for the fighter in that situation, because everyone wants you to, like, shake it off and be tough and just go back out there and fight, because everyone paid to watch this main event and they want to see the payoff. And you're in that moment where the entire arena is just watching you and praying for you to get better. Do you feel that pressure? Are you trying to, like, you know, force yourself to just open your eye to get better, and it's not, and it's like this battle internally with your body, like, please just open so I can see, but also I can't see, and I got all these people that are kind of, like, you know, putting this pressure, putting these eyes on me. Are you feeling that struggle when you're in there?
No, not at all. You know, at the moment, I'm just like, man, like, what the heck is really going on with my eye? Because it just wasn't relaxing. I remember the doctor coming in, like, tell your eye to relax. And I'm like, yeah, Skip, I wish I could do that. You know, I'm trying to recover here. Same thing, you know, I got hit in the nuts my last fight really hard. You know, I had to take almost five minutes to kind of recoup. It's just, I'm trying to recoup within the amount of time and recover. You know, it was unfortunate it couldn't continue. I get it, you know. I totally get it. People pay to see a fight.
How did you feel the referee Herb Dean and the ringside physician, how did you feel they handled the situation?
Amazing, dude. Herb was the man, dude. I was just telling him, he's like, can you open your eye? And I'm like, no. And then he's just like, so get some water over here. You know, he's like, and the doctors came in, and he's like, oh, you still got a minute and a half. He's like, give me a minute and a half. And I'm like, cool, let me recover here. I'm going to have to take the full five. I didn't know what time it was, because I couldn't even see. So I'm just sitting there waiting for the time, and Herb did a hell of a job. You know, Herb Dean's one of the best damn referees ever in the game, you know, and he truly was experienced in there, and it was cool. It was just one of them freak things, you know. He did great.
So they wave off the fight. I mean, did you agree with it in that moment? Like, there was no way that you can continue?
You know, they give you 5 minutes. You know, if you give me a little bit more time, maybe some water, rinse off, but you know, you can't do that in a fight. You know, it's just right off tops, man. I mean, fuck, what was it, 15, 17, 20 seconds, something like that? You know, it's weird, bro. You know, I mean, it's unfortunate. I spent money in camp. Yair spent money in camp. Coaches spent time away from their families. You know, I'm still in the greatest shape ever. You know, everybody wants to fight. This fight needs to happen. You know, that we're in shape. You know, it's just one of them freak little things. You know, it wasn't on purpose. I know that. Yair's not a dirty fighter. You know, we need to run this back.
We saw the footage of you leaving the cage, being shielded by security. In my opinion, the ugliest, or at least one of the ugliest scenes that we've ever seen at a UFC event. I mean, you're just being pelted with things, showered by beer, God knows what else, people coming down, throwing things at you. What is it like for you in that moment? Do you have any idea what's going on? Were you hit? Were you hurt by any of this?
I filled a couple pesos and definitely had some drinks before I ended up in the back. You know, it was this, you know, I expected that from the fans, you know, whether I'd went in there, and I've been in hostile territory before in Brazil, you know, whether I would have knocked him out might have been worse. You know, it was just, I get it. People pay their hard-earned money to watch a fight. I knew they were going to be rowdy. I knew they were going to be on his side. you know, and unfortunately, there's some other things. I was safe. UFC, the security, they did a great job. But I did hear about some UFC staff that and some other people that ended up taking a few injuries and getting roughed up. And I heard, you know, Carla Esparza, when she came out, she had a beer thrown on her. You know, that stuff's kind of a little out of the norm. You know, that's not cool. That doesn't take away from the time that I had down there and the people in Zacatecas when I did my camp and the way that I was treated. You know, I don't really want to speak bad on that. You know, UFC did a great job and security down there of keeping me safe. And that was just kind of an ugly situation.
And just be clear, you said that you felt some pesos, like money being thrown at you, coins?
Yeah. Whatever it was, something hard, you know, whatever. Beer and pesos or whatever they had. I don't know. I couldn't see, man. My head was down. You know, I could just feel things. My coach, you know, I was looking for him, you know, and grabbed him. And right away, he was like, we got to get the fuck out of here. And he knew. As soon as he said that, that's when these things just started coming, you know. And I'm kind of thinking, like, damn, you know, like, I get it. You guys want to see a main event. I wanted to fight. You know, this is my first no contest, and I don't know. I don't even know my record, but I have probably close to over 50 fights. I haven't had anything ever happen like this. Sucks, you know. It's kind of a – I felt bad. You know, I just felt terrible. You know, here I am. My company's relying on me, main event. You know, I perform time and time again, and, you know, I didn't even get a chance to fight. I totally get how the fans would be upset, you know, and it's not my – it's out of my control the way they react, you know, or what really goes on. And, you know, thank God for my coach, my teammates, everybody helped me out, the UFC security. And, you know, it sucks for some other people. They ended up getting injured.
Did you see any of his post-fight reaction? And if so, how do you feel about how he handled it?
No, I haven't seen most of his, I haven't seen really anything. You know, I've been traveling and, you know, I just took some time to debrief, you know, and, fuck, I mean, the other day we almost got into it at the hotel. I thought he was trying to come up and be cordial, and he comes up and he's trying to talk shit to me. And, you know, I came here to compete and fight, you know. It's like, so I had to shove him back across the hotel and get into it with him a little bit. So, I mean, if you're going to talk about me, let's talk about running it back in the United States and, like, some of the three greatest American places over here and come to this otro lado, like the other side. You know, we got Boston, we got MSG, we got DC. Those are three great American places. Like, if you're going to talk about me, let's fight. I came here to compete. You know, he's in great shape. I'm in great shape. We spent hard-earned money. Like, let's go. I came to fight. I came to compete. Like, this is a freak little thing. Let's bounce back.
So where did this incident happen? In the lobby and somewhere in the hotel? You're saying that this wasn't like the weigh-ins or anything. This was when you guys were, you know, away from the cameras?
I was bringing down my bags, checking my bags, waiting. I was going to go grab some food, and then we were taking off. And he comes up, like, all cordial. I give him, like, a thumbs up, like, hey, everything okay? And he comes up, like, shakes my hand. I thought he was trying to be, like, a gentleman. You know, I get it. And he starts talking shit to me. And I was like, bro, you know, I'm not from karate school, bro. I'm from the street. You know, I'm here to compete. I'm here to fight. I'm here to kill you, you know, so – right away, my mentality was, you know, back the fuck up. So I shoved him, you know, and his coaches, his dad, and his parents, and everybody was just kind of like, whoa, 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 you know. And I know his sister has footage. You know, I was waiting for them to release that footage, but I guarantee they're not going to release it because he looked like a coward there, you know, coming up. I thought he was trying to be a gentleman. Fortunately, that wasn't it. And he wants to talk and say anything. I don't know Yair. He doesn't know me. You know, but I'm not like that. You know, I'm not gonna allow you to come up and try talking shit. You know, especially after you eye poke me. So it is what it is. Let's continue this fight. You know, let's go to the best three places in America and run this back. You know, you got to come to this side. You know, and I want to fight him.
Okay, and so just to be clear, this was yesterday. This is after the eye poke that this happened.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I thought you meant before the fight. This is after the fight. So clearly bad blood, is still there. And you just mentioned Boston. You mentioned MSG. You mentioned, December 7th, Washington. Boston is in less than a month. So are you saying that you're okay to return? Like, if they called you today, you want to fight in 3 weeks, you're good. There's no issues there.
Yeah. I can get cleared. My eye's fine. You know, it's one of them freak things. You know, it happened. So, You know, I didn't know if it was going to be worse or whatnot. And fortunately, I come out on a good end, you know, and thank God, because eyes are nothing to play with. I'm in the best shape ever in my life. You know, I spent weeks away from my family to, you know, I didn't come down there for one check. You know, I spent that pretty much down there and taking care of this. I'm in the best shape ever. We can come back to the three greatest places in America and run it back. Let's go. If you're gonna sit here and talk, let's run it back. If not, get the hell out of my way. I'm coming. I want to scrap. I want to move up. This is my life. This is my career. This is what I've been doing for years.
Have any of those talks about running it back happened already, to the best of your knowledge?
You know, I got right back to Sean, said, hey, you know, I apologized for him, you know, to him the day. And he's like, man, you have nothing to be mad about, bro. But, you know, to me, it sucks. It's embarrassing. You know, I was just feeling a ton of emotions, you know. I mean, I don't want to go in there and perform like that. I know what people pay, and, you know, especially down there, people are hardworking and, you know, they want to see me perform. I love to perform. I am a performer. When the lights come on, I show up, you know, and I couldn't continue that night, you know, and let's run it back. I immediately texted Sean and we're trying to figure this out. You know, this kid, I hear he's continuing to talk about me. Well, let's talk about running it back. Cause if you're trying to duck and dodge and dip, you know, like I'm right here. I'm in great shape. Nothing major happened. Thank God. And let's run it back.
Did Sean seem interested?
I think a lot more people are going to be interested in this fight now.
Yeah.
It's even bigger. It's like a checkmate. The money's rising up, you know, now there's more heat, you know. It's like, are you going to talk and run away? You know, I've never been cut from the UFC from backing out of fights. You know, just remember that, you know, I've broken my orbital too, you know, like it's a lot different. So let's go. You know, you're in great shape. You're at the time. Like, let's not waste any time. I'm still ready to go. I haven't, I've only eaten a little bit of food. I can still make weight this week if I had to. So let's continue this.
Considering that reputation, Jeremy, what is it like to have people question your integrity, say that you quit, say that you looked for a way out, that you were scared? Have you seen any of this stuff, and does it make you livid? Like, how do you react to that? Considering you're one of those guys, people in the know that anytime, anywhere. I mean, you, like you said, you've never backed down from anything, and now you have people online questioning you.
That's their limiting belief, man. I can't control what people think, you know. And half those, more than 90% of them, don't even fight. It's out of my concern, you know. I don't worry about things that I can't control. So I'm not too worried about it. People can say everything. You know what the funny thing is, Ariel, is everybody can talk on the internet. No one's ever literally came to my face and says, Jeremy Stevens, you're a quitter, you suck, you're terrible, or any of those negative things that anybody would ever say, you know? So I'm fine, bro. There's nothing that you can do to hurt me. That shit I don't worry about.
Last week you told us you spent 6 weeks in Mexico leading up to the fight, spent around $30,000 on this camp. For all that to happen, to be away from your family and just get 15 seconds, like, you don't get that ability to release the energy. What is it like coming home after all of this, like without the W, without even being in a fight, without any bruises on you? Do you feel unfulfilled? Like, could you explain the emotions as you came back home after being away from so long and not actually getting an opportunity to really fight?
Not only did I have to be away from home, so did he. So did his coaches. So did my coaches. So did, like, my family. You know, to come home with one check, bro, it's not how I feed my family. Look at me. Like, I'm in great shape right there. I'm in the best shape of my life. I felt well prepared. So it's an empty feeling. And to come home with one check, it's just I can't afford that. You know, I spent a lot of money in this camp. I spent a lot of time for it to go down like that. It's just like, It never happened. It's like, I just want to continue this and get this over, you know. And I really want to go up against this kid and just compete with him, just to prove that I can beat his ass. You know, there's nothing really going to change. I want to embarrass this kid. I want to get up in there and get after it. Like, let's go. You know, one check sucks, bro. You know, and I spent a lot of money and time down there, and it's an empty feeling, and it must continue. It must go on. Show must go on.
Well, happy to hear that you're okay, that it wasn't serious, and hopefully I agree with you. It makes all the sense in the world to run it back, so hopefully that happens sooner rather than later. Boston, I think any of those cards, I've seen a lot of fans in Boston who wanted to see Zabit versus Calvin Kattar. That fight got moved. Say, why not put that co-main event under Weidman and Reyes? It makes all the sense. I'm sure you don't care if it's main event or not. You just want to fight this guy at this point. So
the greatest American stage, brother, yes.
That's right.
Coming back to America, you know, the situation's reversed. There's more buildup. It's like a checkmate, you know. Fortunately, like, I'm okay. You know, that's the best thing that could happen. Now we're running it back in the States, in the Estados Unidos, in the greatest states in America. There's three of them. There's that Boston that you just mentioned. There's MSG on a huge card. And then there's DC, baby. So maybe I could be the ones bringing the Trumps into town. So I'm down for it. Let's roll.
Thank you for doing this, Jeremy. I appreciate it very much. Glad to hear you're okay. And hopefully you get that fight. We get that fight sooner rather than later. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Eric. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. There he is. Little heathen, Jeremy Stephens. Unfortunate situation. But here we are. And just finding out that they had a bit of an incident at the hotel on Sunday, adding more fuel to that fire. So we'll see if the UFC decides to run it back. All right. We've been talking about the state of the welterweight title picture for the last several weeks. As of right now, nothing really has changed. We know that Jorge Masvidal is fighting Nathan Diaz. The whole thing is so crazy. My voice just cracked. Colby Covington, Kamaru Usman, are they going to fight? We don't know. We know Leon Edwards is ready to go. He's on quite the run. So we thought, all right, we heard from Colby. Kamaru is not available right now, but Leon is available. So let's talk to him about the state of this weight class and the whole mess surrounding the title picture. Leon, thank you very much for doing this. How are you, my man?
I am good, Errol. How are you?
I'm doing great. So I'm going to ask you a very broad question. I just mentioned Masvidal Diaz. I mentioned Covington Usman not fighting right now. The fight's not booked. How do you feel about what's going on at the top of your weight class, considering the streak that you're on, considering how close you are to a title fight, yet it seems like everything's sort of at a stalemate here?
Yeah, exactly. It feels like the whole division now is in standby. I am ready to go. I am fit. I am healthy. So I am pushing for the Usman fight. I feel I deserve that fight. So that's where I'm at. I believe I deserve the fight. And I know the Colby fight's not happening, what I'm hearing. So I'm ready to go in December.
So you're hearing that that's now dead, that Covington Usman is a dead thing right now, and they're ready to move on?
Well, I mean, they're a stalemate. I think Colby's asking for too much money or whatever it is. But I put my name in the hat and told him I am ready to go. I feel I deserve the shot. I'm on the second most win streak in the old division. So I believe I deserve the shot next.
To the best of your knowledge, you putting that out there, you reaching out to the UFC, I understand your management has talked to them as well. Are they open to this? Are they warming up to the idea of just skipping Colby and going straight to you?
They spoke to my team. For November the 2nd, then they said, the former team said, would you be ready for November the 2nd? I said, yes. And they gave Marcel and Diaz fight. So I messaged them again and said, I'm ready for December the 14th in Vegas. They said, if Colby fight can't get done, then I'm the next in line. So I believe that I will be next, in December.
You know, it's been a couple of weeks now that nothing has happened. Are you surprised that they're waiting so long? It seems like they kind of put this issue on ice. They went and did the Masvidal fight. They're trying to do DC Stipe for December. They did Holloway. But, like, this thing has kind of come to a screeching halt. Are you surprised that they're giving Colby such a long chance to come back to the table and not just moving on?
Yeah, exactly. I just don't understand what they're doing. They're waiting for Colby for whatever reason. Well, I more than deserve a shot over Colby. All it does is talk madness and that's it. You know what I mean? I feel I've earned my title shot, especially against Kamaru Usman, the last person to beat me. So I need to run that one back and I need to get that win back.
Do you have any concern that you're being used as sort of a leverage point here in the sense that they're saying, okay, Leon is ready and on standby, you better get your act together because if not, we're going to skip you and go to Leon, that there's really no true intention to give you that, but because you have a legitimate streak, because you're so close to the title shot, you are a legitimate threat, so you're not really being considered, but you're more being used. Does that cross your mind at all? Does that worry you?
Not really. I don't thought about that since you mentioned it now. But like I said, I believe that I deserve the next shot. I'm doing everything in my power to get the next shot. I have done everything they've asked of me, so I believe I will get the next title shot. So I'm hoping that in December, Kamaru accept the fight and we go from there.
To the best of your knowledge, how close were you to getting the title fight at MSG? Because I heard also that they were having issues with Kamaru Usman. So, you know, Colby's being blamed for a lot of this, but he's not coming to the table as well. And it almost seems like they're working kind of behind the scenes in unison. Did you think you were close to getting it for the MSG card?
All I know is that the former team, they said, will you be ready for November the 2nd? I said, absolutely, whoever it is. And that's it. I thought it was between Masvidal or Kamaru. I said, whoever it is, I'm ready. So that's all I know, really. I don't know how close I got to making the fight or what happened.
Okay. Do you feel like December 14th is close?
Closer than November the 2nd, yeah.
Okay. All right. Have they given you a timetable? Like, you're going to find out by this time? We're going to make a decision by this time?
They said they'll give me a few weeks, and if nothing goes off, then I'm next in line. So I'm just waiting to hear back from the UFC and hear back from my team and to see what's happening. I'm staying in the gym. I'm staying ready. I could not give to who it is. Also, I feel I deserve a title shot. But you've given them number one contender spot. That's even good as well, so... I'm ready to go. I am fit. I am healthy. I'm young. I want to be active this year, so I'm ready to go again in December.
Who would even make sense for a number one contender spot against you at this point?
I don't know. People throw around Woodley's name.
Yeah. What do you think about that?
That'd be a good name to add to my cap. But, my plan is to be a world champion. My aim is to be a world champion, and this is what I'm focused on, is to be a world champion. I've done everything they asked of me. I want a title shot.
If they do come to you and say, okay, we're going to give it to you, is like Colby and like Kamaru, is there a negotiation to be had, or are you ready to go? Like, are you all good? You're everything's agreed to. You just need the date.
No, they're not the payment the right money. I want to just take pennies just to go do it. You know?
Okay.
Like I said, I will be ready to go, whoever, whenever, and but I'll not fight for Trump change, no.
You mentioned that you're in the gym, you're staying fit, you're in shape, you're preparing. Is it hard? Is it hard to get motivated to go to the gym? Like when you don't really know, December maybe could delay to January, February. Like you don't really know what's going on. Is it hard to get motivated?
Some points it is, but I truly enjoy training. I enjoy helping my teammates. I enjoy helping my brother. He's getting ready for a fight in November, and I mean, I'm just enjoying the process. Like I said, I'm still young in the game. I got a lot to learn, and I'm only getting better and better. So these guys are best trying to fight me now than later on. You know what I mean? I feel I'll be. I'm not even near my prime yet. So, I'm enjoying training and enjoying helping my teammates out.
I know you don't love the trash talk and the theatrics and the politics. Has all of this turned you off even more? Like the fact that you're stuck in this situation, you're that close, but it's the stalemate, all this, like, has it turned you off from the game even more so than the times we talked about it in the past?
It's a little bit frustrating, but what can I do, Errol? I've done everything they've asked of me. I've defeated everyone they put in front of me. I'll just focus on what I can control, and I'll keep pushing that way. Otherwise, this game will drive me mad. It'll drive me mad, you know what I mean? So, I just, like I said, I believe in myself. I believe in my team, and I just keep working, and I'll get there. I know I am one fight away. If not, I deserve a title shot now, but I will not take no fight other than title shot or number one contender spot anyway.
I know you said that MSG was on the table, and that's obviously a big deal for any fighter to fight in that venue. It ends up going to Masvidal and Diaz. Masvidal, you have the history with the incident backstage in March. To see what has become of him, to see that he's now fighting for this title that they're creating now, like out of the blue. How do you feel about all of this?
I could not give two shit. I believe it's a journeyman mentality to start creating some fake title and fake whatever they're doing. You know what I mean? Like, my aim is to be a world champion. My soul day will come. You will see when the day comes. But that's all I got to say on that, man. But his day will come.
Are you surprised they're making this belt, that they're actually producing the BMF title?
That's a journeyman title, Errol, yeah? I'm not a journeyman, so I cannot give two shit. I am focused on being a world champion. I don't give a fuck about Masvidal or Diaz. they do what they want to do. I'll do what I want to do.
But just like, because it's guys at 170, do you feel like that deep? Because historically, the baddest man on the planet or the baddest MF-er is the champion, right? So the fact that another title is being created for guys in that division, do you feel like it almost waters down the actual real title?
Once all of a sudden done, Errol, in another 10, 20, 30 years' time, no, that means nothing. That means you cannot tell your grandkids are at a BMF title. That means nothing. You know what I mean? My aim is to be a world champion. I will be a world champion. That's all that matters. You can create as much belts as you want. That means nothing in the long run.
Hmm. Is one thing, though, for the fighters to create it. I'm just wondering if you're surprised the UFC is making it.
A little bit. It's like WWE now, so nothing surprises me no more.
Yeah.
I go in there, I do my job, I get paid, and I take care of my family, and that's it.
Recently celebrated your birthday, correct?
Yeah. 28 now, Errol, getting old.
Come on, 28. Wow. What did we do? Anything special?
Nothing, not really. Nothing really.
Nothing?
My family. Nothing. I went out and partied. That's it.
Nothing. I guess 28 isn't like a milestone of any. It's not quite 30. It's not 25.
Exactly. So I just partied with my friends, chilled with my family. Same shit. I didn't do much, really. Enjoying the game, enjoying where I'm at in life, and just keep pressing on.
By the way, I'm just curious. You know, your brother's doing very well, Fabian. As you mentioned, he's fighting in November. As you're going through all of this, does he ever try to recruit you to say, like, hey, you know, I don't have to deal with this stuff over with those other guys? Does he ever try to do that sort of thing with you?
He tried to tell him to come over, and I keep telling him to come to the UFC. but like I said, he's killing it. He's young. He's so good, Errol. He's like unbelievable. You know what I mean? I'd love to get him in the UFC and just to show the world what he's like, put him more on a bigger stage. But like I said, the kid is amazing, and it will be in the UFC one day.
Do you think he ends up better than you?
I hope he does.
Wow.
Like I said, he's my little brother. We came from the mud, Errol. You know what I mean? So I hope he proceeds. He does everything that I didn't get to do, and he earns as much money as he can and does as best as he can in the game.
So in conclusion, you don't have a fight yet. You feel like it's close. You want Kamaru Usman, December 14th, Las Vegas. You want to fight for the belt. You want to get that rematch against him. You've earned it 8 in a row. You're the guy.
Absolutely, Errol. I am the guy. There's no one else. It's me or Kamaru. We got the two longest win streak in the whole division. All these guys on 2-2 records. Just keep winning and losing. You know what I mean? Like, come on. You cannot be the baddest motherfucker yet if you're on 2-2 record. It's nonsense, but I believe I am. I am next in line, and Kamaru will be ready as well.
And by the way, what do you make of Colby referring to you as Leon Scott? Did you hear that?
It was funny, right? Because I was like, I'm on social media. I was like, who the fuck is Leon Scott? Mentioning like under my pictures, like Leon Scott. So I think, where the fuck is that coming from? I saw the interview with you, and I thought, Colby's a twat. He's a weird guy, and just come from different cloths. I'm from different class from these people, you know what I mean? So I cannot even bring myself to think the way they think. I'm from just a different life and different class from all these people.
I don't even know. Like, I understand Marty Fake Newsman. I don't really get that one. Do you? Do you think he's just calling you a different name?
He's Leo Scott. I don't know what. I don't get it. I was like, who the fuck is Leo Scott? I thought it was like an American thing or something. I thought something to do with America. And, I don't know, Errol. I could not give a shit. He's a weirdo. He's a weird man. I just cannot even. Is what it is.
All right. Well, we'll see how it plays out. Hopefully, we figure. I mean, they just added the second title fight on Saturday, so hopefully we get some sort of.
I mean, they're making three title fights on that bill, so.
Yeah.
Get me on the bill. We'll be perfect. It'll be good. So okay. I look forward to it. I'll keep ready, and I'm ready to go.
All right. Well, thank you for doing this, Leon. I appreciate it. And happy belated birthday. Hopefully for your sake, you get that title fight sooner rather than later.
Do you think I deserve a title shot, Errol?
I think you 100% deserve a title shot. I do think Colby deserves it as well. I'll be 100% honest with you. I think they've got an interesting scenario. I would like them to make this fight sooner rather than later. And I said that if they do, like if they were going to make Colby versus Kamaru at MSG, I wanted them to do you versus Tyron in the co-main. This is before the whole Diaz thing came about, as a number one contender fight, because I do think Tyron should be considered in that mix as well. I don't know what they're going to do now. I do think, I will say, go ahead.
Tyron deserve a title shot?
Do I think what?
Do you think Woodley deserve a title shot?
No. I say you versus Woodley as a number one contender fight.
Oh, okay.
You versus Woodley, number one, if they made Colby versus Usman. But I do think that Colby, all the blame is being directed to him. It's going both ways. Both guys aren't coming to the table. So I feel like that's important to note. So I'm curious, if they do come to you and say, all right, we'll give you the title shot, will he even come to the table? Will Kamaru even come to the table? That's what I fear for your sake.
Yeah, I believe he will. I believe he will. I can't see why not. I believe he will. I think it's more a Colby part than Usman, what I'm hearing.
Okay. Well, it should be no more than one more. Next is totally fine, but one big fight and then you're there, or next. That's what I don't think you should be going on a 13-fight winning streak Tony.
No, that would never happen. I'll leave the company and go somewhere else. I'll never do that.
Right.
I'll never do 30, 40 fights and then title shot. Never.
How many fights do you have left on your deal anyway?
I believe it's one or two.
Oh, so you're getting close.
I'm up for renegotiations now, but I was waiting for the right fight first before going into negotiations.
Oh, wow. So this is really important. I mean, you could, if you conceivably keep winning and then leave if you want, if you don't feel like you're getting that fight.
Exactly.
Okay.
I'm here for the bouts of the dough area. Yeah, that's it.
So yeah.
You pay me, I get the bout. That's it. I'm not here to hang around and be a journeyman.
Is there a deal on the table? An extension?
Come on. There is negotiations, but I got a few people I'm talking to and shit. But
all right.
I want to be a UFC world champion. That's my dream, and I will be a UFC world champion.
Okay, all right. Interesting times for Leon Edwards. We'll see how this all plays out. Thank you for doing it, Leon. I appreciate it.
Good man. Thank you, brother.
All right, Leon Rocky Edwards. Interesting spot. Very interesting little nugget there as far as his contract is concerned. We'll see how it plays out. Colby, Usman, Leon Edwards, a very interesting time at 170 pounds. He certainly is ready and willing. At the very least, one fight, I think the Woodley fight, if they do end up going with Colby versus Usman, one fight against Woodley, I think would make a lot of sense. As of right now, there is no deal with Usman and Colby. December 14th is still missing that one title fight that they'd like to add. There's been talks of DC Stipe. There's been talks of maybe a John Jones fight. Perhaps if the winner of Weidman Reyes comes back quickly. It's all very much in flux. Great to get his side of the story. Way back when, our next guest was a top contender at 170 pounds. He has been in spots where he derailed a guy who was knocking on a title shot door. Jake Ellenberger back in 2012 had that close fight against Jake Shields around a year or so before, when he was getting ready to fight that big fight against GSP at UFC 129. He is the pride of Denmark. He is the greatest fighter to ever come out of Denmark. 11 wins, most wins ever by a Danish fighter in the history of the UFC. The next best only has one. And we haven't talked to him in quite some time. Martin, the Hitman Kampmann, who this week I was thinking about as the UFC is returning to Denmark, or I should say making its debut in Denmark. I thought, why not catch up with the face of Danish MMA, Martin Kampmann, and there he is. It's been a while since we've talked to him. Martin, so good to see you, my man. How are you doing?
You too, Ariel. I'm pretty good.
It's been a while since we last talked.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So
it's been a while.
It's been around 3-4 years since you walked away from the sport. Before we get to this weekend, what have you been doing over the last 3 or so years?
Well, right now I just got out of training here at the Great Danes. I'm in Denmark now training. Great Danes MMA gym. I got the guys out here standing here. They're watching your show right now. They're making faces on the side of the other side of the window here. So I just got out of training. I'm still a little sweaty.
No problem.
I jumped in. You know, if there's an odd man out, you know, I'll jump in and still get some rounds in, and I still get training in. Not like when I was still fighting, but I still get some training in, you know. I still enjoy training.
Is this your own gym?
This is like a gym, and it's like an association, you know. In Denmark, the setup is different, you know. There's not that many gyms that's kind of being run as a business. A lot of gyms is like a association that's where you get subsidized from the government to have sports clubs and for keeping people engaged in sports and stuff like that. But I'm the coach here, and we have a great team, great things, fight gym, and we have a lot of good guys. Mostly amateur guys, but we're working a lot, and everybody's improving all the time, and hopefully bringing out more guys internationally.
Is the gym in Copenhagen?
No, we're in Odense.
Okay.
Odense.
How far is that from Copenhagen?
Two-hour drive from Copenhagen. Yeah. So you're welcome if you're ever around Denmark.
I would love to. Unfortunately, I'm not going to the event this weekend, but one of these days that would be amazing. I'm wondering, you know, you retired relatively young, and we often see in fight sports people retire, and then they eventually come back. Just this past week, we found out that Rashad Evans is coming back. Have you ever had the itch to come back? Have you ever thought about it?
Oh, I get the itch all the time. All the time. I really enjoy fighting, you know, and out here in Denmark, I also do for some of the commentary for Viaplay, who has the rights to broadcast UFC. So I do some of the commentating in Danish. So every time I watch a show and commentate, and I'm watching, walking out of there shadow boxing, you know, because I enjoy MMA. You know, I'm not just a competitor. I'm also a fan. And of course, I get the itch all the time, but I already made a clear decision to not continue fighting. And now I'm still enjoying training very much, and I enjoy coaching, and I enjoy helping other people get better and improving as fighters. And you know, this week in Copenhagen, we have Marco Madsen that I'm coaching, and he's competing on a big spot. You know, his UFC debut, and he's a co-main event here in Denmark. So it's a pretty big deal, and it's a pleasure to work with him.
Yeah, the 2016 Olympic silver medalist.
That's right. Yeah, he's like a 5-time world's Greco-Roman medalist. He's a stud, and he's really improved his game, and he's gonna do really well in the UFC.
How long have you been working with him?
For about I don't know, 2 years maybe.
Okay,
maybe less. We've known each other for a longer time, but there was a long period where he wasn't where he was still committed to wrestling, you know. So he was allowed to do some MMA from the wrestling association, but he couldn't, you know, he still had to focus on wrestling when he had the European championship, world championship, and all that stuff. He had to do the wrestling camps, and he wasn't allowed to do MMA. But he made the switch to full-time MMA and, you know, stopped wrestling completely. And after that, you know, he's really taking leaps and bounds, because, you know, then he could focus on it and not just, you know, half-ass, you know, interest. Before, you know, now it's 100% focused on MMA. Task at hand, and now right now he's 8-0, and he's made it to UFC co-main event, in his first UFC event here in Copenhagen. So
yeah,
he's a really driven and talented, and just he's a stud.
Yeah, it's a big spot for him, as you mentioned. He's now the co-main event against Danilo Beluardo, and he's a local guy. And I'm wondering, is he the only guy that you'll be cornering on this card, or do you have anyone else?
No, only guy. Unfortunately, well, there's only two Danish guys on the Copenhagen event. You know, I want to complain a little bit to the UFC. Yeah. You know, I think they could have put some more Danish guys in there. You know, there's other Danish guys that could have made the shot. You know, there's Mads Brunel. He was already in the UFC. He's a stud. I would like to see him again. Søren Bak, and also of course there's Demir. He's already signed in the UFC. But there's a lot of Danish guys. I would have hoped to see more Danish guys on a Danish UFC event. But I'm happy to see Mark, of course, because I'm coaching, and also Nicholas Dalby, who's also really looked good in his last fight. So
that's right.
I'm really excited for UFC in Copenhagen.
Yeah, Nicholas Dalby, the other one who was released from the UFC, now coming back. Great story, overcoming depression and alcoholism. We spoke to him recently, so I'm happy to see him. But I agree with you. I thought there would be more Danish fighters. For you, when you were fighting and you were, you know, main eventing and you were a top contender, did you ever try to push for this to happen? Like, is there a part of you that says, like, man, I wish you guys would have come when I was an active fighter, that I could experience fighting in my home country?
I never really pushed for it, to be honest with you, because back then it just didn't seem too realistic, you know? Mm-hmm. It didn't seem... the sport is a very niche here in Denmark, and it's still small, you know? It's mainly, you know, soccer and handball, but it's gotten a lot more mainstream attention, especially here after Mark... got into the sport, because he was, you know, he's a well-known, you know, athlete. You know, Denmark is a small country, so we don't have too many Olympic medalists, you know, in sports. So him being an Olympic medalist and making the jump to MMA and doing a great job and has brought more mainstream attention towards the sport. And I think it's definitely helping get more attention. But also now in Denmark, there's the whole MMA scene, of course, is growing a lot. You know, when I was in Denmark and fighting, you know, it was tough to get fights. I'd go to Sweden to get fights. I'd go to, you know, England, go to Russia. You know, I'd travel a lot. You know, now we just had a lot more easier to get amateur fights here in Denmark. You know, we had a low-key MMA event this week here at our gym, you know, where there was opportunity to get fights and a lot easier to get experience. So it's growing. It's definitely growing, and it's growing a lot since I started getting into MMA here in Denmark. And there's a lot of people that's done a great job helping in that progress.
And I'm sure you're responsible for a lot of that, because for the longest time, you were the only Danish fighter fighting in the UFC and certainly the most successful. How big of a deal is this event? Like, you feel a lot of buzz for it? Have a lot of tickets been sold? What kind of sense do you get?
I think, I don't live in Copenhagen, but I'm definitely, of course, I'm going to the event. I'm cornering, and I feel there's definitely going a lot of buzz. There's a lot of mainstream media that's caught up on it and writing stories, and I've been contacted about it, you know, because of my history in the UFC. So definitely I'm expecting a hopefully sold-out arena, but if not, then close to sold-out arena. I think this also is going to bring in a lot of people from surrounding countries, you know, because we have a lot of European fighters that's on the card. So we're going to get, you know, there's Jack Hermansson on the main event. You know, he's a great guy too. So they're going to come down from Norway, Sweden, and there's a lot of European guys. It's going to be a cool event. I'm really looking forward to it.
After you retired, we recall you coaching at Team Alpha Male and used to live in Las Vegas as well. Why did you eventually decide to go back home and not stay in the United States? Was that always the plan, or did something come up that brought you back home?
No, I always I enjoyed living in the U.S. too, but I've had 3 kids in the U.S. and when you get kids, it's nice to also sometimes be a little closer to your family, your relatives, and that was part of the reason moving back to Denmark was you know, I also wanted my kid to experience growing up in Denmark, and also it's nice to be close to your you know, grandparents to take you
sometimes, right.
You know, a little relief.
Oh yes,
kids. You know, you have a kid as well, so you know sometimes it's nice to get a little relief.
Absolutely,
I got 3. You know.
Yes, I have 3 as well, and I don't live in the same country as my parents or my in-laws, so I know exactly what you're talking about. It's a nice luxury.
Yeah. Yes.
And so you went back home to start coaching. Is this what you do full-time now? You're a coach at this Great Dane school?
I'm a coach here, and I do a lot of things. I also coach at a school for physical education, kind of where I do some martial arts. And, of course, I coach Mark, who's fighting this week here in Copenhagen Fight Card. I have a web shop with my wife, and I have a bunch of different stuff that's together taking plenty of time. But it's all a big part together of smaller pieces that makes
right.
up the whole deal.
When you think back on your UFC career, what was your favorite moment? Favorite fight, favorite performance, favorite moment? Is there something that sticks out above the rest?
I don't know if I have a favorite moment, you know. That's a tough spot. But just my first fight, winning in the UFC was definitely a big deal for me, you know, because I came over in the U.S. and I didn't have no expectation to fight, hoping to get a fight maybe on a smaller fight card. And then first I got a fight on WFA, which was trying to kind of compete with the UFC. They came in and spent a lot of money, and eventually they didn't stick around. UFC bought them up. I got the opportunity to fight in UFC, and that was really really a big deal for me back then. Of course, every fight, you know, I'm a big UFC fan, so
yeah.
But just getting my foot in the door and getting established in the UFC was a great experience.
My favorite,
I have a lot of fights that I like.
The Jake Ellenberger win I thought was massive for you. I still believe you beat Jake Shields. What do you think?
Thank you, appreciate that.
Do you agree?
Oh man, I don't know. I think I definitely did more damage, but to be honest with you, that's one of my fights where I was really disappointed in my own performance. I thought I didn't fight a smart fight, you know. I thought I could have fought way smarter. So even though you know, some people think I still won it, I'm mostly thinking about, you know, I didn't do my best. I didn't fight smart, you know. I was making it too much of a ground fight where I could have, you know, instead of playing, I was trying to submit him and playing into his jiu-jitsu game. I should have just pounded on him a little bit more. But, you know, you make mistakes, you learn from them. And that's some of the stuff that I can carry on and show to the guys that I'm coaching here at Great Danes, and also, you know, to Mark, who's fighting this week.
Yeah, and of course, that fight against Diego Sanchez in Kentucky was phenomenal. The Carlos Condit fights. I mean, you have had some classics, my man. Do you ever sit back and watch them? Do you show your kids what their old man did? Do you get to educate them now?
Oh, man, it's been a while since I watched any of my fights. But
really?
Maybe I will now that you reminded me. I'll have to go check them out again, show them to my kids, you know.
They don't ask?
They just see me.
How old's the oldest?
He's 8.
So does he have any sense?
He's more... you know, because I bring him to the gym sometimes, you know. I bring him to the gym. But they're more into soccer. Everything's okay. Soccer out here.
Right.
I'll wrestle with them and stuff like that. And I'll scramble fight a little bit with them. But they were doing judo for a little bit. But they're not into fighting like I was.
Who do they like? Peter Schmeichel? Isn't he Danish?
Yeah, he's too old, though.
Okay.
They don't even know who that guy is.
Didn't he have
a son? Casper.
Yeah.
He had a son, Casper Schmeichel. He was a good goalkeeper as well.
There you go. All right, so Mark Mattson, look out for him, right? That's the guy this Saturday.
Hey, another thing about him. We were at the UFC PI. This, you know, we're training in Vegas, came out for training camp. You know, they do those strength and explosiveness tests out there.
Yeah.
And he took the record for 2 out of 5.
Oh, wow.
For 155. You know, and they said 155 is the most tested weight class.
Oh, really?
He's a stud. He's just a, you know, different level athlete. You know, when you do the Olympics, all that wrestling, doing wrestling your whole life, he's a stud.
And
he's starting to pick up on his hands. And of course, he's got solid wrestling. But
sure.
Hands are getting heavy and getting sharp. And
you guys were just in Kazakhstan, right?
Yeah, we just came back from Kazakhstan because United Wrestling, well, World Championship in Wrestling was out there. And he already committed to doing some commentary and work for him. So he wanted to, you know, honor that commitment, even though he had the fight set up. So obviously, you know, best thing for the fight camp would be just to not go to Kazakhstan at this time. But,
right.
You know, he wanted to honor his commitment. So we went out. I went with him, and we still got some good training in out there. And it was really a good experience to, of course, watch all the wrestling out there, but also to get to enjoy Kazakhstan.
I bet. Wow. All right. Well, I got to say, man, it's really great to catch up with you, Martin. And I'm really happy for your success and that you're still in the fight game and now producing talent that we're going to see on display this Saturday. Like I said, when I thought of Denmark, I thought we need to catch up with Martin Kampmann. And I'm happy that you're going to be there in some capacity. And I'm also happy that you haven't scratched that itch. I respect greatly when a fighter walks away and just walks away. And, you know, we see too often guys coming back and, you know, I understand why they come back, but they look like shells of their former self. So I respect you for ignoring that itch as much as possible and now training guys and giving back. So keep it up, my man. Continued success. Good luck to Mark this weekend. We'll be watching for sure.
Thanks, Ariel. Always a pleasure to talk with you.
Yes, we'll talk to you soon. There he is, Martin Kampmann stopping by. Great to talk to the Hitman. Longtime UFC veteran, top contender, has had many great victories over the likes of Jake Ellenberger, Thiago Alves, Rick Story, Paulo Thiago, Jacob Volkman, Carlos Condit, Jorge Rivera, Drew McFedries, Talis Ladies. I mean, a who's who. Also a great poker player as well. So great to see him back and looking forward to Mark Mattson's debut this Saturday. This is a great card, by the way. A sneaky good card, flying under the radar. Like I said at the top, some really good names. Jack Hermanson against Jared Cannonier. We'll talk to Hermanson in a bit. Mark Mattson, as I mentioned. Gilbert Burns against Gunnar Nelson. Khalil Roundtree. OSP, Nicholas Dalby. John Phillips. Ciar Bahadurzada. Macy Chaisson against Lena Landsberg. Mark Giacchese against Lando Venata. Jack Shore making his debut. Brandon Davis. There's a lot to like. All right, there's some of the lineup. Before we move along to our next guest, let me tell you about our good friends over at Vivid Seats. By the way, Corporate Jake, you know, I gave TSD some crap for this last week on the MMA Reporters, which I know you all love, that you can download each and every week on the same feed that you download this show. I mean, you use the same song every week. I mean, from what I understand, there's a very extensive library of songs at ESPN. Perhaps we could switch it up. What do you say?
Pick this music.
Yeah, I picked it back in June of 2018. I mean, I didn't say that you had to stick to it. I mean, let's switch it up. Perhaps this week, we're going to Denmark play some Danish music. Next week, we're going to Australia, play some Australia. Like, let's get in the mood here. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. All right. I'll take
it. I mean, it would be nice to see you flex your creative muscles. You certainly like to flex your muscles just in general. Flex those creative muscles. Anyway, before we move along to our highly anticipated next guest, let me tell you about our good friends over at Vivid Seats. You know I love them. They support us. We support them. We know that MMA fans are some of the most passionate fans in the world, but that doesn't mean you all don't like to watch other sports. We know you do. So listen up, because Vivid Seats is offering ESPN fans 10% off football tickets, but you have to act fast. Head to VividSeats.com and enter promo code ESPN at checkout to receive 10% off your first order. Vivid Seats is the official ticket partner of ESPN. And with their 100% buyer guarantee, there's no reason to miss a game this year. So don't wait. This offer ends soon. Head to VividSeats.com and enter the promo code ESPN25 for 10% off your next order. Get off the couch. Get into the action. Your team needs you. God bless the Buffalo Bills. They don't need me because they are 3-0. All right. So today on the show, we have some of the biggest names in mixed martial arts. We have Jorge Masvidal coming up. We have Daniel Cormier in his first interview since his loss at UFC 241. Talked to Leon Edwards, Jeremy Stevens. We got Jack Hermanson. When I put out the lineup, though, about this particular week, all the comments were about our next guest, and he's not even a fighter, but you love him. And to be honest, it's long overdue that we have this man on the program. He is a comedian. He is a podcaster. He's an actor. He's a host. You know him from the Church of What's Happening Now. You know him from the Joe Rogan Experience. You know him as the incomparable, the often imitated, never duplicated, the pride of Bergen County, the pride of Cuba, the pride of Colorado, the pride of a lot of things. The great Joey Coco Diaz on the program. Joey, how are you, my man?
Good, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great. Wow. What a response to you being on the program. People flipping out. People so excited. I've never seen anything like this before. You are beloved. Did you know this?
I hear it, but I didn't know it was this much. You know?
Well, I feel like you're being a little humble. Well, like I said, it's...
I am. You have to be.
That's right. And I appreciate you downloading Skype. Is this your first time doing a Skype interview before?
Yep.
Just for me?
Yep. Just for you.
Well, Joey, you're great, man.
I'm a big fan of you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. The Skype is kind of going in and out.
I love how you put this together.
Wait. I want to hear this from you. Should we reconnect with Joey? Because it's going in and out. What should we do? Okay, Joey, we're going to reconnect with you. Stand by, okay? Because the Skype is going in and out there, and I want to get Joey. You know, these days the FaceTime has been a lot better than the Skype, if I'm being honest. I'm not trying to pit the two between each other, but I'm just saying it's been a lot better. Corporate Jake tells me I can't do it, and it's a whole big problem.
Never
he pushes
that.
Back. He gets mad at me. It's a whole to-do. All right, we're going to reconnect with Joey Diaz. A lot of you are very excited to hear from him. After Joey Diaz, we're going to talk to the great Jack Hermanson, who of course meets Jared Cannonier this Saturday in the main event of that show in Copenhagen. After that, we'll hear from Jorge Masvidal. I sat down with him on Thursday before the press conference in New York at the Get Up Studios in the South Street Seaport in Lower Manhattan. And then we shall talk to Daniel Cormier as well in his first interview since UFC 241. So I am looking forward to all of that. Also, in addition to the Denmark card, by the way, it's a loaded weekend of MMA action. We've got the Bellator doubleheader on Friday in Dublin. Bellator Europe. It's one of those weird ones where it's like a Bellator Europe and also a Bellator 227. I don't really understand how they break this down. But Benson Henderson versus Miles Jury is, I think, the headliner. It's a little confusing. But it's in Dublin. There's a lot of local guys that you all heard from. James Gallagher is on the card, or I should say James Gallagher. His opponent had to pull out last week, but they were able to find him a replacement. And then that's on Friday. But then on Saturday, it's the conclusion of the first round of the Bellator Featherweight Grand Prix. Bellator 228, Patricio Pitbull against Juan Archuleta, Lyoto Machida against Gegard Mousasi 2. Darren Caldwell against Henry Corrales. That's a great fight. Saul Rogers against Daniel Weichel. Georgi Karahanian against AJ McKee. And AJ McKee is the son of Antonio McKee. and his dad is fighting on the prelims. Father, son on the same card. Isn't that insane? That hasn't happened very often. Antonio McKee, legend of the fight game, now a trainer, coming back, fighting on the prelims on the same card as his son. 28-6-2, Antonio McKee. AJ Agazarm also on that card. Who else? There's a bunch of names there. Leandro Ego, Sean Bunch. That's an interesting one. So that's Saturday in Inglewood, up to no good, California. And then Friday is the 227. What else is on this Bellator Europe card? Richard Keeley against Michael Venom Page, of course. Peter Queeley returning. That card has kind of been ravaged by all kinds of injuries and cancellations, so they've had to sort of cobble it together. And then the 227 card has Kiefer Crosby on it, Will Fleury, Franz Miombo, and then a bunch of local guys on the undercard as well. Also, in addition to all that, Cage Warriors is this weekend. Cage Warriors 107. There's also an LFA card. LFA's future is somewhat in limbo after the sale of Access TV. But they are putting on another card. I've been talking to some people about that as well. So a lot of MMA, a ton of MMA going on this weekend. It never ends. It never stops. What's going on with my guy? What's going on Wednesday? Okay. What's happening on Wednesday, you said? Oh, okay. You want me to promote Ariel and the Bad Guy? Do I have anything to actually... Oh, there it is, right there. All right. Every Wednesday, Ariel and the Bad Guy on ESPN Plus on the platform that we built, Chael and I, with our own hands, off our shoulders. By the way, how about NFL Primetime getting on ESPN Plus these days? Isn't that incredible? I actually go out and watch it. ESPN Plus is the place to be. So yes, every Wednesday, show some love. Chael and I doing our show, Ariel and the Bad Guy. It's tremendous, as Joey Diaz likes to say. It comes out every Wednesday at around 6:30, 7 p.m. Also, I do MMA Reporters every Wednesday. What did you say, Corporate Jake? No problem. I never know when you're talking to me if this is for the world to hear or should I relay this message. I'll also let you know, by the way, that next week we are off because it's Rosh Hashanah. It's the Jewish New Year. And so last year we did a show on the Jewish New Year. It was on a Monday again. I don't know how it happened 2 years in a row. And I felt horribly guilty. But I was new at ESPN and I felt like I couldn't miss it. But I said to Corporate Jake and New York Rick at the time, back when they were friends and working together, that I will never do this again because that's one of the holiest days for my people. So I decided that this week we'll be off. So we'll be off next week. We'll return the following week. All right. I'm told FaceTime, the always reliable, is working much better than Skype. Let's see it. Joey Diaz, are you there, my man? Joey, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, let's see if this is better. Where are you doing this from? A cave over there in California? What's going on?
No, my house. It's my house. I don't know what the hell's going on with the Wi-Fi.
It's all good, my man. Well, I appreciate it. You were saying something. You were showering me with praise, so I didn't want to miss that.
I said that I love what you do, that you've been doing this since day one on your own, and you had a lot of naysayers, and you kept going, and you're the best in the business. I watch your show whenever I can.
Well, I appreciate that, and I know you've had my back as well, so that means a lot coming from you, Joey. When did you first fall in love with MMA? We see you talking about it all the time, but what first drew you to the sport?
Anderson Silva, Chris Leben.
Really? Why that one?
It just happened to come on as I was watching TV, and I never saw anything like that before in my life, and I dug into it, and now I love it.
Was this before you were friends with Joe or after?
Oh, I was friends with him for 10 years, and I would hear about this nonsense. I grew up on Bruce Lee and karate schools. I knew nothing about jiu-jitsu or nothing, so him, Eddie, they'd be talking, and I'm like, whatever. And, you know, because I saw, like, the first couple fights, and the guys looked like me. Like, they were big and out of shape, and I thought it was barroom brawling, but then once I saw Anderson and I started watching other fights, I became in love like everybody else does.
You know, I've seen the clips, I've seen the gifs of you in the karate gi. Is that legit? Like, did you really practice karate back in the day?
From 7 to 16 and from 25 to about 30.
Okay. Why did you stop at 30?
Now I just, because I got into drugs and comedy.
So, fair enough. And have you ever... Go ahead.
Now I go to Muay Thai twice a week. I'm 56. I lift, and I try to get a roll in once a week on the Lord's Day.
Wow. So you're very active.
So, yeah, I got a six-year-old brother. I got to be on top of it.
Wow, you have a six-year-old. Is that your only child?
That's all you need is one. Look at the budget.
I like it. So you had a kid at 50 years old? Well done.
Yeah. Some guys fire their wives and hook up the receptionist and get a Corvette. Not me. After 13 years, I knocked my wife up.
Okay. And do you let your son, you know, watch your comedy stuff and listen to your podcast, or not quite yet?
No, my daughter is by the book.
Excuse me.
No cursing in the house. No alcohol in the house. She goes to Muay Thai. I wanted to have a different childhood than I had in New York City, running around like a savage. So we're out here in California. Everything's very nice. No drama. And I like it that way.
Wait, so you say no cursing at the house. I mean, you're sort of infamous for your cursing. It's just sort of second. Every third word on your show is a curse word. But at home, nothing.
Nothing.
Wow.
Nothing. Because it's irrevocable. You know, whatever that word is, irreversible. I learned how to curse at my mother's bar when I was her age, you know. And then being an immigrant, when you come here, white kids don't show you the right words. They show you curse words first. And then they show you the George Washington and Abe Lincoln. But usually they teach you curse words, so it stuck. And here I am, 56 years later.
And so is this how you know so much? I've heard you talk about the immigrant mentality. This is where you learned it from.
Absolutely. It's immigrant mentality is like this. You have to be better. Your parents raise you to be. You have to be better than the white kids. And at the same time, with this pressure at the house, you have this insecurity. You don't know the language. People are looking at you weird, you know. So that's the immigrant mentality, you know.
I have to say, my favorite clip of yours, like I watch it time and again just to put myself in a good mood, is you and Joe watching Eddie Alvarez against RDA. That to me is the all-time great. That's the best one by far. That moment of you just getting all fired up and talking about Philadelphia, where's Conor McGregor now? I mean, that was just incredible. That passion, that excitement, you know what I'm talking about?
Like, I love it.
Isn't it amazing?
I love it. I love the direction the UFC is going back to again. We've had a couple good cards, the last couple cards, no drama, great sportsmanship, and I applaud Dana for November 2nd for the BMF belt. I think it's a great idea. It's going to be a great fight, and it's a fight for the fans, finally. It's not about pay-per-views, and it's not about throwing things at buses. If you're a fan of MMA, you're going to watch this. So I'm very excited about this fight coming up.
I feel like you really don't like Conor. You bring him up, you can just subtly... Why don't you like this man?
I love Conor McGregor. I love his range. I love his personality. You know, Irish and Cuban are very close. We got close during the Battle of the Boyne in the 1600s. There was a war, and all the Irish went to Cuba because it was a Catholic country. My wife is Irish. I love everything about Conor McGregor. I think that when he got into the game, it changed it a little bit too much. And now we're back to leverage. I think him and Rousey threw us off for a bit, but now we're back on an even ground again. And I hope Conor comes back, and there's some great fights waiting for Conor. So, no, I have nothing against Conor. I just didn't like the antics that were going on for a long time, but now we're back to normal.
You know, it's interesting when you go back and watch that clip of you reacting to Eddie's win over RDA. I don't know if you remember this, but you say, like, where's Conor McGregor now? And you kind of predicted that if he ran into Eddie, he would get smoked. Of course, we know what happened. So that it's kind of crazy to watch that clip several years later. That must have been shocking to you. You seemed very convinced that Eddie would just steamroll him.
I thought either Eddie or whatever would steamroll him, but like I said, when you fight Conor, it's half physical and so much mental.
Yeah.
When you go into the octagon with Conor, your headspace has to be in a really good place. You can't get intimidated. You can't let the hype get in there. And I think that's what happened to Eddie. I think that's what happened to a lot of his early fighters. They let Conor masterfully, because that's what Conor does the best, is get into your head. But that could work with you or against you. In my neighborhood, that's called pissing on your leg. That works with you most of the time, but then on the other end, it works against you sometimes. But no, Conor's a great fighter, and I love what he's done for the UFC. But there's been moments. We've all had our moments. I love John Jones.
Yeah,
I hate what's happened with him, but I'm a tremendous fan of John Jones and a friend, a dear friend. So
you're a dear friend of John Jones?
I love him with all my heart. He comes to the, when I go to New Mexico, he comes to the shows. I knew him before he had the title. I used to call him Fear of a Black Planet, like Public Enemy.
And so you guys hang out.
John Jones, when you see John Jones, just call him Fear of a Black Planet. That's John Jones.
Okay. So you guys just chill out together?
No, I've never chilled out with him. I've seen him after fights.
Okay.
And spoken with him. And then I went to the club in Albuquerque last year, and he showed up on Friday night looking tremendous. And we spoke, and I gave him a hug, and he's a gentleman and a sweet. I've also gone down to Jackson's camp and said hello. So my next venture is AT&T to say hello.
Okay.
You know.
Well, of course, we know at AT&T there's a very proud Cuban fighter there. You are of Cuban descent. What is it like for you to see what has become of Jorge Masvidal? This guy has exploded. All of a sudden, going into this year, I mean, he was just a good fighter. The hardcores knew him. Now he's a mainstream star. Everyone loves him. Cuban Jesus. He's got the beard. He's got the Scarface outfit. What do you make of what's happened to Jorge?
Jorge's coming to his own. He's the prime. A man's prime is between 26 and 32. And somewhere along that route, you find yourself as a man and as a fighter. And when they both meet, or whatever you are, as an announcer, a comic, at that point, it met. And George is a different person, and he makes me very proud. I was a fan of George 15 years ago because of his corner men. His corner men would be yelling in Spanish, "Métale un galletazo." That means smack him in the face. And I would sit there at home howling, saying to myself, "You can't smack people in the face. It's a UFC." But that's the mentality of the Cuban. He would say, "Métale un galletazo, oye, métale un galletazo, ahí, tócalo." You know, touch him means to, when you say tócalo, that means to touch somebody. And that's what his corner would say to him. And I'd be laughing. Nobody else would catch it. And that's how I reached out to him and Kawa, and we became friends from there.
And would it be safe to say, or safe to assume, that you're rooting for him on November 2nd? I know you like Nathan Diaz as well.
Now, I got a big problem here.
Uh-oh.
I mean, on the boat from Spain,
yep.
My cousins decided to jump off in Cuba, but Nick Diaz's family said, "We're going to go a little farther." And they went to Mexico, and then they shot up to wherever they're from, 909 up there. So Nate Diaz is the man. I bet on Nate Diaz against Conor the first time just because of his jiu-jitsu skills. And I know what it takes to be a jiu-jitsu black belt. And I fall in love with him. I've never, ever met Nate. Never met Nate in my life. I was very proud to see that he had no ring rust against Pettis. He looked great. And I think, like I said, this to me is the best fight the last 5 years because it's for the fans.
Mm.
It's not about pay-per-view. It's not about throwing bottles. It's just about the fans. And they're both acting like gentlemen. I saw pictures of Nate out at 182 afterward. And this fight, as a friend
And as a gambler, I'm not going to bet it. I'm just going to sit, watch, and enjoy it like every other UFC fan.
Do you bet on a lot of fights?
I bet on the ones I know I could win.
Okay. All right. When's the last time you won big?
The biggest one was Nate. I had Frankie against years ago against one of the guys when he fought the three times.
Gray Maynard.
I bet him Ray Maynard.
Yep.
I bet him the second fight or something. I took my wife. Joe gave us tickets. And when was the last time I put one in? I don't remember.
Okay.
But I usually don't bet the main bout because everybody's focused on the main one and nobody's Houdini. Nobody has a crystal ball. And there's usually a good fight in the prelims or in the undercard that you could make some money on. So if there's something I really like, I go after it. But I'm such a fan that I wouldn't want to ruin it for myself like I did. When I was a kid, I'd bet football. And I ruined it for myself. With the UFC, I want to watch it as a fan, so I'd rather not lay money on it, you know?
Yeah. And you mentioned the fight. You love it, the BMF title. Is there a part of you, are you like an old school guy where you're like, yeah, they're making a fake title here. This, you know, this is kind of a little bit WWE-like. Does that bother you, or you're all in on this? You love it?
Not at all. This is not WWE. I think this is brilliant for the sport. I think every once in a while, two guys, it doesn't mean anything about the standings. Let's just get two guys that want to battle it out. I mean, I don't want to see Cejudo beat up the Russian chick or her beat him up. Nobody wants to see that.
Right.
But I wouldn't mind seeing a couple different, you know, let's take a chance. Columbus did. You know, maybe Stipe drop down to 2-something and John Jones go up a little bit. And it doesn't mean nothing to your rankings. I would like to mix that up a little bit.
Yeah. You love Stipe, huh? You call him Stiopic. Stiopic.
Stiopic. I love Stipe. I love Frankie Edgar. I love Cowboy. You know, I could see that the next fight for McGregor, the easy option for the UFC would be either, you know, somebody like Cowboy, who's had a 2-fight losing skid, and he looks like an easy prey, or Frankie Edgar. But both of those guys got a good fight left in them. You know, both of those guys are, you know, when you fight Conor McGregor, you rise for Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
And either you get the knock, or either you get knocked out because Conor will touch you with that left, or you could take it into 5 rounds or something. But I'm also excited for Conor's next move because it's either got to be Dustin, Okukui, Justin, or just think of that 155.
Yeah.
The 155 division is like the NFC East in the old days. You had the Skins, you had the Eagles, and you had the Giants and the Cowboys, and you prayed somebody didn't pull out a gun. Like, you prayed that somebody didn't pull out a gun. Like, where's John Riggins? He might pull out a gun. Like, this is what 155 has become. Justin Gaethje's exciting. We're waiting to see what Kukui's going to do. You know, Dustin Poirier, whoever Dustin Poirier fights next, expect brain damage. You understand me? Expect to carry around a ball and learn sign language. I feel bad for whoever fights Dustin Poirier next.
I love this.
So, I'm very excited for the 155 division. You know, I think John Jones is cemented at 205. Stipe's back. Will I like to see him and Daniel? Maybe, maybe not.
Oh.
Maybe, maybe not. I'm a big fan of Daniels, and I'm a big fan of Stipe, so maybe, maybe not. 185, I'm excited for my man Whitaker when he comes back. So the UFC is exciting again. I'm excited. I'm ready to rock.
What do you
prefer? Even though I had to pay for ESPN 5, I like it. I'm in. I don't care.
You're in. All right. We appreciate your business. Thank you.
Thank you.
It has to be El Kakoui against Khabib, though, right? None of this other stuff. It has to be Ferguson-Khabib next, right?
Well, listen, they're giving me – I want to see, like every other fan, Khabib against Kakoui.
Yes.
That's the obvious choice. GSP's raising his hand. I hear rumors about GSP. That, again, that is, let's do a BMF belt there. Mm. Let's give that a title. If nobody wants to see that, yeah, we want to see Kukui about against Khabib. But Kukui's a fighter. I'm a comic. I don't make no money sitting at home cracking jokes in the mirror.
Right.
So Kukui's got to fight somebody. He's a fighter. He's doing push-ups. Kukui's doing push-ups as we speak. You know? So the 155 division, if you're a fan of the UFC, this is as good as it gets. You know?
By the way, what did you make of Masvidal's outfit at the press conference? Did you see that Tony Montana outfit that he was sporting?
Listen, man, he's like Al Pacino in Carlito's Way. In the beginning, when he said, I'm rejuvenated, I'm affinated, I'm caffeinated. He's back.
He's on fire these days. Then he shows up in Mexico with the sombrero and the bullets. Did you see that as well? The guy is just oozing machismo right now.
Yes, and him and Nate are doing a great job. Look at them, gentlemen. Nobody's saying nothing to each other. They're having a good time. You do your best fighting when you're happy, when you're smiling. That's what I love about El Kukui. He's in there doing the mambo and the Macarena. You know, this is happy UFC again, you know. I don't have to clench my fist anymore when I'm watching them sweating. So I'm very excited about the next couple of months to see what happens. But back, do I want to see GSP Khabib? I watch it, but we all rather see Khabib and Kukui and get this over with.
Who's your favorite fighter of all time?
My favorite fighter of all time, the guy that I cried when I saw him get knocked out a couple times, was Chuck Liddell.
Oh, wow.
I love Anderson so much, I don't like to see him fight live. When my friends fight live, I cannot go to the fight. Because if you think what happened at the Khabib fight was bad, I will throw chairs, I will go in there, I'll get a heart attack right in that octagon if one of my friends. You know, I can't do it when I'm, attached to somebody like that. I don't want to go to their fights. I don't want to go. I'd rather see it on TV. Because if he does get hit, my New York City, Cuban, Jersey, Santeria, next thing you know, I'm flying in the octagon. I got one fat leg trying to climb over. The dude is trying to push me back. I can't go see my friends fight. So,
by the way, can I ask, why do they call you Mad Flavor?
Because I'm Mad Flavor. That's the name Biggie Smalls gave me.
Did he really give you that?
No, but I got to say something from time to time that's not true.
Amazing. How much do you enjoy podcasting? You love it. You seem like you have a great time. Your one with Action Bronson was a great one, one of my favorites. We had him on the show last week as well. I love hearing you guys talk about food.
Yes. No, I love podcasting. I love what it's become. I don't love that they can hold things against you that you say on there, because it's not. I'm not being judged. I'm not being, you know, I'm not on the network. That's why I do the podcast, because I enjoy being free on it. And we can talk about whatever, and you know. But beside that, I love podcasting. It keeps your word. It keeps your heart out there. It's like riding the subway in New York. It keeps you in tune with what's really going on, you know.
So that's right.
I love it.
You can talk to the people. And so you're doing that. You're doing it quite often. Any comedy specials coming up? Any movies coming up? Where can people see more of you?
You know what, man? When it comes to comedy specials, I'm no good. I'm no good on tape. I'm better live. I'm a savage when I'm live. And I got the podcast. I've been working on a one man show at the Comedy Store in Los Angeles. I'm in Chicago this weekend at the Chicago Theater Friday night. So I'm always busy. I'm always doing something. Plus, I got the 6-year-old. I got a PTA meeting Wednesday night. You know, all that type of stuff.
You show up to those things? Do people know what you do in your day job?
I live in a very gluten-free community over here.
Okay.
They look at me and they think I'm John Gotti's nephew, so they don't say much to me. I use, you know, I go prepared to these things when I go. Some parents speak to me. Some parents look at me, and but I don't care. I go there for my daughter. I'm trying to raise a daughter, so it doesn't matter what they think.
You know, coincidentally, John Gotti's nephew, John Gotti III, is a pro fighter. Did you know that?
Yes, he's doing quite well.
Actually. He is. Yeah, he's undefeated. He's good. So that made me think of that.
Yeah, who would throw a punch against him? No, I'll just go in there. He breathes on me. I'm going down because I'm getting beat up one way or another, either today or mañana. You know what I'm saying?
By the way, when I was talking to Action, he told me, like, when he's performing, he's in the back watching the fights. He's doing everything. Like, he surrounds everything around. Like, the fights are the thing, and then he works around it. Do you do the same? Like, when you're out on the road and you know there's a big fight, are you watching them as well backstage in your dressing room, all that stuff?
I try everything I can. You know, with my luck, I always get booked, and then the big fight comes on that date. Obviously, I have a family out there that I want to go see on the road, so I can't cancel. So I'll do anything I can to watch the fight at the club. I'll call a week before, and I'll pay for it myself. I'll do whatever I can. And somebody always, there's always a dishwasher or a waiter or somebody at the event that's a fan like myself, and we'll watch them together. I don't like watching a fight after it's on Twitter.
Right, yeah, no, because you know what happens.
I can't do it.
It's a waste.
Yeah, I can't do it. I can't do it.
Well, Joey, I got to say, this has been a huge honor for me. I know you're very much in demand, and you speak with such passion, and I think you represent the fan when you speak about the sport and the fights, and your excitement is contagious. It's really just a lot of fun to see you react to it, and to talk about it in your podcast is very entertaining. I mean, I was really blown away. I know you're very famous. I know you're very popular, but to see all these fans so excited you know, for you to be on the program really warmed my heart. So thank you so much for doing this, and hopefully we could do it again soon. I wish you nothing but the best, you and your family. Keep doing your thing, my man, and continued success to you.
You and your family, and send Chael my love.
I will. Thank you, Joey. All the best.
And most important, stay black, brother.
All right, my man. All right. Assalamu alaikum. Thank you very much. There he is. Joey Diaz. Joey Coco Diaz. Wow, what a legend. A living legend joining us on the program. That was a lot of fun. I appreciate his time. Busy guy, but definitely check out his podcast if you've never heard it. It's The Church of What's Happening Now. His Twitter feed is hilarious as well. Add Matt Flavor gets you very pumped up for the day, very excited for the day. So keep it up and check him out. He's in Chicago this weekend as well. And I think he does a phenomenal job with his stand-up. So well done, Joey Diaz. Thank you very much for joining us. Okay, let's go back to the Copenhagen card this weekend. The main event, Jared Cannonier, Jack Hermanson. Huge fight in the 185-pound division. Let's say hello now to the Joker himself, one of the breakout stars of 2019. Jack, the Joker, Hermanson, I should say. Jack, how are you?
I'm great, Ariel. Thank you for having me.
You have to emphasize the Herman, right? Not just Herman, it's Hermanson.
Exactly.
Okay.
Got it right there.
So where are you right now, Jack?
I'm at home here in Oslo, Norway.
Oslo, Norway. When do you go to Denmark?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. This was the one you wanted, right? You just wanted to fight on this card. You've been talking about this for quite some time. I know you wanted the card. What about the opponent? What did you think when they gave you Jared Cannonier?
He wasn't my pick, you know. I tried so hard to get Kelvin Gastelum, and I know that the UFC really tried to engage him and really make him to take the fight, but he said that he's not ready for this date, so he couldn't make it happen. So I just asked who's next in line, and they said Jared Cannonier. And I said, all right, you know, I want to be fighting here at home. I want to be fighting in my backyard and to be the main event in Copenhagen. So, I got to roll with it, and that's the situation. But for sure, I could have been happier with the opponent.
were you aware of what Jared has been doing? Like, has he been somewhat on your radar, or once you were offered him, Did you have to go look him up?
No, I knew who he was, and I knew that he was coming from behind, you know, with a lot of hype, and he's been looking great here in middleweight. So I was expecting that they were going to offer me him.
To the best of your knowledge, did they actually go to Kelvin and offer him this, and he said no?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
I spoke briefly over the internet with Calvin as well, and he said that he didn't want this date. He wanted the fight, but he wanted it later this year, not for this event.
Okay, so you actually what? Like you DM'd with him or something?
It was an open conversation. Yeah, I just wrote something. You know, I really tried to call him out a little bit and commented on some posts, and so it was not really a conversation, but it was clear that he wanted a fight, but not on this date.
Okay, and for you fighting in Copenhagen, I mean, you have ties to Sweden, you have ties to Norway, obviously. Why did it mean so much to you to fight in Denmark?
Just to be close at home, almost every fight I need to travel far, and it's the enemy territory. So it's a nice feeling to be fighting close to home, where friends, family, and fans is gonna be able to see me live. And I want to grow into the role as the leading martial artist here in Scandinavia. Especially now when Alexander Gustafsson has stepped down. So I think it's time for somebody to take over the throne, and I think that guy has to be me. So I felt that this main event was made for me.
Obviously, you don't live there, but I'm just wondering: is there a lot of buzz? It's the first time the UFC, when they go to a country for the first time, usually it feels like a really big deal. And we were just talking to Martin Kampmann. There's only two Danish fighters on this card, so I feel like they're adopting you as one of their own. Are you sensing a lot of big deal, or do you think you'll a lot of buzz for this, or do you think you'll only really feel that once you get there tomorrow?
It has been some buzz, but I'm looking forward to see how the vibes are when I get to Copenhagen, and I expect it's going to be a great show, and that the community will enjoy this one.
Has life changed at all for you since you beat Jacare? You notice a difference?
Yeah, I do. It's a little bit more, people are recognizing you. You want to. You get a little bit more media attention and so on. But my life looks pretty much the same. I'm training twice a day and eating and sleeping, and that's about what I do. So I don't see too much.
I don't know if you saw this interview that Jacare did recently with MMAfighting.com, but he talked about, dealing with depression after the loss and being very emotional afterwards. Did you read that? And if so, how do you react to that, knowing that you're like it was because of your fight? Not that you have anything to feel bad about or feel guilty about, but just that he was reacting, to something that happened in a fight that you were involved in. Do you have any sort of reaction to that?
I can relate to that. And I really felt with Jacare after the fight. I can really understand that he was really, really close to the ultimate goal. And he has been in the game for such a long time, and he was so close to get that title shot. And then I'm coming from somewhere and destroys that. So I really feel with him and understand his feelings. So, but on the other side, you gotta do what you gotta do in this game. So you can't show mercy when it's time to fight.
You say that you can relate to him. What do you mean by that?
I've been in similar experiences. I remember after my loss to Thiago Santos, where I really, really felt like, I felt like shit afterwards. And when I got home, I was in a state that I probably never have been in other situations. I felt super empty. I could look into a wall for several hours without moving, without being able to think, a type of emptiness. And that has to be some kind of depression. So I can relate to that feeling after a loss like that.
How did you snap out of that?
It was hard because I felt like the only way I could snap out of it was to get back to training and to continue to grow. But I was injured after the fight. So it really took some time before I could train properly again. And that really held me back. So it was like 6 months later, I was able to train properly again, and then I started to feel a little bit better. So, to get back in there with new goals and get back in training, I think that's the best medicine. And I see that Jacare is going up a weight class and has a new fight, so But I'm happy for him.
And interestingly enough, since that fight, you have not lost. And so I'm wondering if that feeling that you experienced afterwards fuels you, like that is part of your motivation for not losing, for not feeling that again. Do you think about that a lot? Has it stuck with you?
What I did after that fight was that I got a mental coach.
Ah.
So since that fight, I got a mental coach, and I learned to both to be better prepared before my fights. But should a thing like that happen, then I'm prepared for that as well. So I really feel much more comfortable now going out there, and I feel like I'm able to perform closer to my abilities after working with him. So I can really recommend that to everybody that's struggling with pre-fight nerves or depressions after fights. So mental coaches is great if you can find a good one.
Do you still work with him?
Yeah, I do. I just had a meeting with him like 1 hour ago.
Wow. And like this last meeting before the fight, what are you working on?
We're talking about preparations for the fight week and making sure that I put all the stressful things away, that everything is prepared for me to go as smooth as possible, the things that I'm going to be thinking about on fight week, and visualization and so on. So I want to be as prepared as I can for the week ahead and what's coming.
And do you suspect that for as long as you fight, you'll work with someone like this?
Yeah, absolutely. But our work was more intense in the start. Now I have learned to master many of the techniques that we've been working with. So we're not seeing each other as often as before, but more like briefly. And he's reminding me of a couple of things and so on. So I believe I will continue to talk with him, but not as much as in the beginning.
Will you talk to him before the fight at all, or was this it?
I think this was it, but he reminded me that I can call him at any time if I should need anything. So he's a security for me if I need him.
And just curious, cause I'm fascinated by this. Like in this winning streak, was there ever a moment like the night before a fight or the day of a fight where you felt like you really needed to talk to him and you called him?
Once. I can't remember, but I don't think it was a like an acute situation or anything like that. I just think that we had a chat at the hotel room, and it just reminded me of a couple of things that I need to think about. So usually the work is done before I travel, and it's such a big difference for me right now and before. So it's even hard to put words on how important that has been for me.
So the winning streak now makes sense. Ever since you started working with him, you're undefeated, 4-0. One of those wins came against David Branch. Did you hear last week that he's been suspended 2 years by USADA?
Yeah, I think that's my second opponent. I think Bradley Scott was suspended as well. So I got two of those guys right now. So.
Did you suspect anything with him when you fought him? I mean, it was a short fight, but did you think of anything like that?
No, you know, I'm very careful about judging people, from their performances or their looks or anything like that. I think people are a little bit too talkative when it comes to mentioning people's names in doping situations. So I'm very careful with that. You should not take anything from anyone that, especially if they hasn't proved guilty in any test or so.
So right now, 185 is very interesting because Paulo Costa, had that big win against Yoel Romero back in August, and you're having this fight so close to the middleweight title fight, which is in a week from your fight, October 5th. Costa says he's flying out there, says that he's been, invited. I know you think that if you went on Saturday, you should get the next fight. What do you think? Do you think it's going to be Costa first and you're probably going to have to fight someone else?
Let's say like this, if somebody's injuring themselves, I'm probably the one that's getting in there because Costa won't make the weight.
Ah.
But if it goes like scheduled, I believe Costa is the next one. You know, he's undefeated and he has a big name and a lot of hype. So, but I'm happy to have an elimination fight with him if they want to. If not, then I will wait for my turn. But I know that I will fight for title eventually. But definitely, it's me or Costa for the next title shot if I beat Cannonier.
Are you saying that you're going to fly to Australia after your fight in Denmark to be a standby fighter? Is that what you want?
Just if the UFC would ask me to.
Okay, they haven't though, right?
No.
Okay. This time next year, Have you fought or will be on the verge of fighting for the UFC title?
Yeah, for sure. That's in my mind. That's my goal and that's my vision. Next year, I'm going to be the UFC champion. And I think it's realistic to think that in the end of next year, there will be a possibility. So, yeah, that's in my mind.
All right. Well, the next step is Saturday against Jared Cannonier. By the way, congratulations. I think you recently signed a new contract with UFC, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Thank you very much.
Yes, well done. So a lot of exciting things for Jack the Joker Hermansson. And they continue Saturday on ESPN Plus against Jared Cannonier, main event in the first ever event in Denmark. Thank you so much for doing this before you fly out, Jack. I really appreciate it. And all the best to you on Saturday.
Thank you so much, Ariel. Speak to you soon.
All right. There he is, the Joker. Always smiling. I love that guy. Always in a great mood, always happy. And what a fascinating story about working with a life coach. Great stuff there from Jack Hermansson. What did you say, Corporate Jake? Did you say something to me? Oh, okay. So should we wait? We might as well wait now, right? Okay, a bit of a change of plans, if you will. We're going to actually be joined in a couple minutes by Daniel Cormier, and then we're going to be joined, or we're going to air our interview with Jorge Masvidal. So 5 minutes from now, we'll talk to Daniel Cormier, and then we'll air the Masvidal interview. I appreciate everyone tuning in. Our show, by the way, I don't mention it enough on the live version of the show, but the show does re-air. Well, actually, it doesn't re-air. Like a one-hour version of the show, a cut-down version that Corporate Jake and the rest of the team back there work on, airs usually at around midnight on ESPN2, but there's some new elements to it that don't air on this, in particular my Turn Back the Clock segment, which I like very much. In this particular week, we look back at the 7 spinning backfist knockouts in UFC history. And I didn't know this. I don't know if you guys knew this, but the first ever spinning backfist knockout in UFC history was by Shoni Carter, Mr. International. I had no idea that he fought against the guy who was on Looking for a Fight now with Dana White. Like Dana White's friend on Looking for a Fight was actually the guy in the fight against Shoni Carter. I had no idea. Why didn't anyone tell me this? That's one of the best. But of course, it ends with the Steven Peterson knockout on Saturday, which was actually a counter to a spinning backfist from Martin Bravo. Counters it and then nails him. An unbelievable turn of events. That was a fun card on Saturday. I enjoyed it. Irene Aldana looked phenomenal. Maybe her best performance to date in the UFC. Couldn't help but think of Henry Cejudo as I was watching Brandon Moreno. People like to laugh at Henry Cejudo. People like to call him cringe and make fun of him and all this stuff. None of this would be happening without him. If he would have lost to TJ Dillashaw on January 19th of this past year in Brooklyn, there is no flyweight division. It's dead. Like, I don't think enough people realize this. And there's a very good chance that Henry Cejudo never fights again at 125. That weight cut takes a lot out of him. Had he lost that fight to TJ, they would have closed it up. Moreno himself had been released, went to LFA, brought him back. Now you've got Kai Kara-France. Sergio Pettis looked great in his fight on Saturday in his return to 125. Like, there's a legitimate case to be made that if it wasn't for that one particular win and everything that he did leading up to that fight and everything that he did after that fight in the build-up to that fight, there is no 125-pound division anymore. Isn't that amazing? The guy single-handedly, and I know, look, he's on the longest victory tour of all time. Every single event, whether it's in Abu Dhabi, Mexico, God knows where, I mean, he's probably going to be in Denmark this weekend as well. Every single event, it seems like he's there, sitting in the front row, huffing and puffing with a replica medal, by the way, not the real medal, but it's real gold, but it's just not the actual gold medal. I'm not even sure if he got the gold medal back. Remember a couple of years ago, he was in that fire. He was at this retreat somewhere in Northern California. He was in that fire and the whole thing, you know, his whole room went up in smoke and he actually lost the gold medal. He brought it there because he was there to do some promotional appearance. So I don't even think he has the real one back yet, because I think he told me that he has to like go through a whole process to get it back. But someone made him this replica one out of real gold. So he, you know, he he shows up to the events with it and whatnot. He deserves a lot of credit. It's unbelievable what he's been able to do. I suspect that his next fight will happen in the first quarter. It could be against Dominic Cruz. I know they've talked about Joseph Benavidez, but I think it's a little too soon right now to pinpoint who he's going to fight because he's still rehabbing that shoulder. Despite his world travels, he is still rehabbing that shoulder. My colleague, Mark Raimondi, over at ESPN. Okay, I'm sorry. Moreno. Someone's getting really mad at me for... I apologize. I guess I was calling it Moreno. Moreno. This is from Mark Raimondi of ESPN.com. He spoke to Yair Rodriguez. You'll recall at the beginning of the show, we spoke to Jeremy Stevens about an incident that happened yesterday at the hotel as he was leaving. Oh, we have the sound. Okay, here's the sound from Jeremy Stevens, and then I'll tell you what Yair Rodriguez said about it. Or do we not have the sound?
Today we almost got into it at the hotel. I thought he was trying to come up and be cordial, and he comes up and he's trying to talk shit to me. And, you know, I came here to compete and fight, you know. It's like, so I had to shove him back across the hotel and get into it with him a little bit.
Where did this incident happen? In the lobby and somewhere in the hotel? You're saying that this wasn't like the weigh-ins or anything. This was when you guys were, you know, away from the cameras?
I was bringing down my bags, checking my bags, waiting. I was going to go grab some food, and then we were taking off, and he comes up like all cordial. I give him like a thumbs up, like, hey, everything okay? And he comes up, like, shakes my hand. I thought he was trying to be like a gentleman. You know, I get it. And he starts talking shit to me. And I was like, bro, you know, I'm not from karate school, bro. I'm from the street. You know, I'm here to compete. I'm here to fight. I'm here to kill you, you know. So right away, my mentality was, you know, back the fuck up. So I shoved him, you know, and his coaches, his dad, and his parents, and everybody was just kind of like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
So that was Jeremy Stevens' side of the story. This from Mark Raimondi, just posted right now on ESPN.com. Quote, Rodriguez told ESPN that he went up to Stevens, quote-unquote, nicely, and asked how his eye was. Rodriguez said Stevens told him it was fine, and Rodriguez said he asked him if it was okay now. What happened in the fight? Things escalated from there. Quote, he pushed me like a little expletive. And I just told him, you will live the rest of your life with that in your head. If you could continue and didn't, shame on you. Quote, I'm ready for the tests and the proof. If I'm wrong, I'll apologize in public. No problem. That's more from Yair Rodriguez. All right. That's the story there. We'll see if they actually make the fight. Let's not do it. I just want to get to all right. So in a matter of seconds, we're going to be joined by Daniel Cormier. This is the last time we heard from him. This is following UFC 241 in Anaheim last month at the Honda Center.
A lot of times we base decisions in emotion. I don't want to be that guy, you know, so I'm going to go back and talk to Selena and talk to my coaches, and we'll figure out what's next.
Okay, so everyone wanted to know after that fight what would be next for Daniel Cormier. Of course, he has talked about retiring at 40 years old, wondering if that was the last time he would compete in the octagon. Last week, Dana White telling several media outlets that they were working on a trilogy fight against Stipe Miocic. Let us not speculate anymore. Let us talk to the man, Daniel Cormier, who is kind enough to join us. There he is. DC, how are you?
I'm doing good. How about you guys? It's been a while.
It has been a while, DC. It's been a while since that particular location was on the show. We haven't done one from that spot in your house. So it's great to talk to you, my man. And before we get to anything, I just want to send my condolences. We've obviously talked in private, but, you know, because you lost your father recently, I know how much he meant to you. I just wanted to send my condolences to you and your family and ask you, how are you doing several weeks later after the news of his passing?
You know, it's the hardest thing, you know. Like, I mean, my dad was a fantastic man, and, you know, he really sacrificed a lot in life to try to make a life for us, and to lose him was terrible. I mean, it was just so fast. You know, we went from we went from hearing about him having a form of cancer in March, colon, to, you know, April. They told us that through radiation that they had gotten it and he was good, and early, you know, you guys did that interview in for E60 in June, like the 30th, and July 1st, my sister said he looked sick, so he took him to the emergency room and they told him that he had a real bad form of cancer we just didn't know about. So the whole month of July, you know, we dealt with trying to find, they told my father he had 6 months to live, and so the whole month we were scrambling trying to find second opinion, everything else to try to help him. But, you know, 2 days after you guys did that interview, it's just crazy how fast that disease can run through somebody, especially a strong man like my dad.
How much was he and his illness on your mind as you were preparing for that fight? You didn't speak about this in the build-up, but how much were you thinking about it?
This is a very slippery slope, right? Because, you know, I don't want to discredit Stipe in any way.
Yeah.
You know, I want to give that disclaimer. It's hard whenever you're dealing with a lot of family issues, but he won the fight, you know, and he would have won the fight regardless. But, you know, it is what it is, you know. We all have our problems, and my burden was to deal with what I was going through at the time. I just think, you know, more than anything, Ariel, you know, like when I was going into the fight, the week prior, about a week and a half prior, my dad got sick again. He went to the hospital. And then they sent him home the Sunday before the fight. So when I went to Anaheim, my father got sent home. And everything was good, you know. And I thought, you know, we were going to continue to try to find what was happening. You know, they had just given him some new medication. And we were just very hopeful. And my parents are normally right front row for the fight. And, you know, they weren't. So I called them before the fight and found out he was back in the hospital, you know, so it was just a lot to deal with, but ultimately, you know, Stipe won the fight and he would have won the fight regardless, I guess.
You know, we know that you take losses hard. You wear your emotions and your heart on your sleeve. We saw the clip of you afterwards. We saw you in the cage. You were very emotional to deal with the loss. You were so disappointed about the result, but then to deal with a real life thing like your father's illness in the span of a week, I was just concerned for your well-being. How are you handling it all mentally, emotionally? How are you handling those two traumatic things happening in the span of a week?
You know, losses are hard on me, you know, and it was very difficult, but, you know, Stipe is a good guy. You know, he's a great father and he won the fight. But, you know, I just went back to Louisiana and I think when I went home, knowing what I knew, the fight was the furthest thing from my mind. You know, I went back to my mom's. My father was just really sick, you know, and that was the only concern. So, you know, I think it keeps things in perspective a little bit. You know, you just kind of able to put things in perspective, you know, like as much as I love sport and everything else, you know, my family and everything is, it's so much more important, you know, and in that moment, I would have given any title, any amount of money, anything to try to just help my dad, you know, and I went home to that, you know, so I think it just put things in perspective, and I just went and dealt with my family, you know, for everything, you know. I got to spend 11 days in Lafayette. That's something I hadn't done in years. And, you know, I got to spend like the following week of the fight with my father. And then, then the next week with my mom, you know, as we were preparing for the funeral and the services. So, it just really helped to put things in perspective. And then when I came home after everything, now, I have to deal with the effects of the loss, you know, but it was really put off for a while because more important things took the precedent and took my focus, from the fight, you know.
In the midst of all of that, you went to speak to the Texas A&M football team just like days after the fight. Why did you do that? Yeah.
You know, I was talking to Jimbo Fisher, the coach, and he said, boys do what they want. Men do what they're supposed to do, you know, and I thought there was a lesson to be learned in that moment, you know, that I made a commitment to those kids to speak to them, and it was my job, and it was what I was supposed to do. You know, I'm not a kid anymore. Kids do whatever they want. Men do what they're supposed to do. And I'm a man, and I was supposed to go there. And then on Thursday, I spoke to some veterans, you know, about overcoming hardship, you know, and I was dealing with it in the face of all adversity. And even Coach Fisher said this. He goes, DC lost the biggest fight of his life last Saturday. And he goes, you think he wants to be here? He goes, no. He said, he's a man. That's why he's here, and men do what they're supposed to do.
And so I'm wondering now, here we are a month and a half or so removed from the fight. Have you had the chance, or did you have any interest in sitting down and rewatching the fight from start to finish?
No, I haven't. I watched the fourth round of the fight. That was it. Because ultimately that's what, those are the things that I need to, accept. I think when you are dealing with something that's that hard, losing a fight, you need to see, don't cloud your judgment with any success you may have had. Deal with the underlying issue. Deal with what ultimately led to the result. And what ultimately led to the result was me doing certain things and the end of the fight, and just truly ignoring all advice from some of the best minds in all the sport. You know, Bob Cook, Javier Mendez, Rosendo Sanchez, and Leandro Vera. Like, it was, you know, it was me not listening that got me beat, and ultimately I deserved to lose that fight, because if I would have continued to win that fight or won that fight, it would not have been the lesson that I need right now in my life.
What should you have done differently in that round?
You know, I think just been a little more cautious. You know, the issue for me is I fought very emotional in that fight. You know, just very, very emotional. And, you know, obviously that's easy to do whenever you're landing just about everything you throw in, but also, just out there essentially fighting. You know, I'm generally a pretty safe guy, safe to the point that at times I get booed out of buildings, you know, but, everything we trained to do was what you saw in round number one. And then at the end of it, it was just like, I don't know what happened. You know, it was crazy.
When you say you fought emotionally, like, you've obviously been there with guys that you don't like, John Jones. I mean, that's one of the greatest rivalries in the history of the sport. Why were you fighting so emotionally against Stipe? We know that there was some friction, but why so
but
emotionally?
Not that. You know, I think, you know, when we get to this fight, Ariel, like, it was like everything was going so well. You know, we had that beautiful E60 piece, and everything was going so well. It just, the world was at my fingertips. And but on the backside, I was going through so many bad things. And I think you can't control anger, you know. And, you know, we went to the arena about 5:30, and I called my parents to say bye, and then I'm going to talk to them after the fight. And, you know, my dad's back in the hospital. You know, so it's like, what, you know, what's going on? And I'm really not trying to take anything away from Miocic in this corner. I just lost, but I felt like I could have done a lot of things better.
Did you feel like in hindsight you got a little overconfident? Because you were looking really good. Like, that first round couldn't have gotten any better. And I remember them telling you in the corner, like, put your hands up, you know, respect his power. Did you feel like you were feeling yourself a little too much?
I think, I just didn't feel the threat, you mm-hmm. know, and honestly, I didn't feel the threat in round one, two, three. I think Stipe did a great job. It was like he was hitting me in the stomach, right? And I was feeling them, but they weren't really hurting me. Like, they weren't hurting me. But then the very last one before the finish, he hit me with one right on my rib. And when he hit the rib, I went, ugh. And that's when I went to, like, kind of tighten my belly. And, like, my hands dropped, and then he hit me with a beautiful combination up top. That was just great work by him, you know. And it goes to the fighting mind frame, mindset, and the ability of Stipe Miocic. You know, he went hard body shot, And then I'm like, well, the one that hurt me, instead of chasing that again, he went up top. And that's the one that hit me across the tip of the chin. And that's when I started to stagger. And I've generally been very good about not allowing that follow-up strike to hit me when I'm hurt. But this time he was just so straight and crisp that it landed. You know, there was nothing, I just didn't see it.
When you watch the fight, and in particular that fourth round, which you said you watch, and then you see him win and celebrate and do the dance and all that, what does that do for you inside?
You know, it's weird because it doesn't anger me. It really doesn't anger me. You know, I mean, a guy had his moment. You know, it was like a guy had his moment, especially in that way. You know, I mean, this guy got hit a lot, you know, and he had to go through a lot of he sustained a lot of damage, and he went through it and he got the job done. So, I mean, I've celebrated, you know, that doesn't affect me. I mean, he had to stand through me and Brock Lesnar, you know, doing what we did last year. So yeah, that didn't affect me. What affected me was my kids, you know, and my wife, and looking at the face of my children. And that's what affected me. It wasn't his celebration or him watching what my children went through is what hurt. That hurt. I just felt like my whole life I live for protecting my family, my wife and my kids. And I just couldn't believe I put them through that, you know, and they've been to fights but they'd never seen the other side. And, that's what hurt him dancing. No, them celebrating. That's to be expected. He just won the heavyweight championship of the world.
What did your kids say to you after the fight?
That's tough. You know, my son is, he loves the sport. He loves fighting. And, I said, Dan, don't cry, bud. And he just said, I'm trying, you know, and he was just trying. And he was trying his hardest to not cry. And he just could not turn it off. I think that's the first time that he was so emotional and didn't know how to deal with his emotions. And, you know, I thought he was very brave and very strong in those situations because they've got cameras pointed in their face because everybody wants to see their reaction too. And I thought my son was very brave. I thought my daughter was very brave. I thought my wife was very brave in a sense that they saw that I was hurting and they were trying to be strong to make sure that I knew that my support system was very, very, very strong. And they were going to try to hold me up even though it hurt them just as bad. But I thought they were brave. I was very, going back now, I'm very proud of them. They did well.
As you know, one of the big narratives going into that fight was whether or not it would be your last fight. And I saw a clip of you in the locker room afterwards where your son asks you, is this your last fight? And you said you didn't know. And so obviously the big question now is a month and a half later, have you decided if you will keep on fighting?
You know, I just never, again, like I didn't have time to really process this decision immediately. You know, it was more, deal with my family. You know, my mom lost my godfather in May, which is her brother, and then her husband in August, you know, so, I was more worried about my family. So I didn't really process this decision. And then I got a call from Dana a couple weeks ago and we spoke at length and he talked to me first as a friend. And then he started to ask questions about my career because obviously it's his job to do also. And, they asked me what I'd want to do. You know, I said, let me think about it. Went and talked to Bob and Dwayne and Javier and Rosendo and my wife. And, you know, they were all like, hey, DC, whatever you decide, we'll do. But it was Selena, you know, she goes, Daniel, you don't end like that. This is not how you end. She goes, you lose again, you know, then it's just meant to be, you know, but for you to be fighting as you did, even with the worst fight IQ in the history of your career, you managed to go out ahead going into that round that you lost, you know, so you go fight your fight, you know, and if you lose, even when you fight your fight, and you know, we're fine, you know, but you don't end like that because I don't want you to do this now. And then 4 years down the line, you start going, I should have did it again and tried to do it right. So, I'm gonna fight this guy again, and my intention is to fight him in the right way, and hopefully that's enough to get my hand raised. But I'll go fight him again, you know, win or lose, I'm not fighting again. This will be the only time that I ever step foot in the octagon again.
So the next one is officially the last one.
Next one will be the last one,
and it's against Stipe.
But it has to be Stipe. No one else matters.
And is that offer on the table right now from the UFC? Do they want to make that fight?
Yes, they want to make that fight. They want me to fight Stipe again. Yeah, it was a fantastic fight. It was a fantastic fight for all the wrong reasons. It didn't have to be a fantastic fight, but it was. And I'm not saying I can just go grab Stipe Miocic and throw him down at will, you know, but I can do a lot of things better than I did on August 17th.
And is there a date attached to that fight right now as far as the offer is concerned?
No, there isn't. You know, I think Stipe's dealing with some stuff. You know, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go whenever. The sooner the better for me. You know, day after the fight, I spent 13 hours at Disneyland. I went with my home. I had 38 people from Louisiana that had never been. So I took them all to Disneyland, and I'm ready to go. I'm just waiting for a date for him and I to go fight again.
I know they're looking for a main event on December 14th. Is that too soon, or would you be down to do that as well?
I'd be down to do it.
Okay.
December 14th becomes available, that would work for me. I'd be happy to get myself ready to go.
As you may recall, it was quite the journey to get to the second fight with the Brock stuff, and you know, you had back surgery as well. Is there any part of you that is concerned that Stipe will try to turn the tables on you and make you wait and make you sit this one out and drag it out to the point where you'll say, I don't want to wait, and maybe you do, or are you just going to wait as long as possible and get that fight?
I'm not going to wait as long as possible. If he doesn't want to fight, then okay. He doesn't want to fight. But I didn't necessarily make him wait purposely. I part of the waiting was actually because I had back surgery. I didn't have the go-ahead to just go. The moment I got the go-ahead to start training, I did. You know, and I did as best I could. But the reality is, like, with my back, I probably could have waited more time for it to heal. But I felt like, okay, it's functional enough to go. I'm just going to go fight. You know, I want to fight. So it's what I do. I love to compete. And once I thought I was good enough to train, I said, okay, I took a fight. You know, so it wasn't because I was, like, trying to make Stipe Miocic wait. No, I had back surgery in December and couldn't do anything until April. And I started training camp in May. So I went as soon as I could.
In your talks with Dana White or the UFC brass, your management, have they said that they've offered this to Stipe? Do you know how he feels about it right now?
They just told me, you know, they're going to go talk to Stipe. That's it. You know, I'm only worried about what I can control. You know, I cannot control this man. I get a fight offer. I take the fight offer, then it's up to the other side. I'm only going to worry about what I can control. I mean, I'm not in a place right now, Ariel, where I'm chasing, I'm waiting, I'm begging. I'm not doing any of that stuff. I don't need to. Either we're going to fight or we won't fight. That's how it is. I mean, point blank. I'm just going to see what happens. I mean, I hope he fights, you know. I hope he fights me, run it back like I ran it back with him. I mean, I didn't necessarily have to. You know, I could have took that big win last July and said, wow, that was beautiful, and fought somebody else, you know, but I imagine if the Brock Lesnar thing was on the table for them, they would have probably did it too. Such a massive fight. But the moment they told me he wasn't fighting, I said, okay, I'll fight Stipe. As I said from the moment, I said, if for any reason Brock doesn't fight, I'll give him this rematch that he so rightfully deserves. And I did.
Had you won that fight in August, now could you tell us in hindsight, would it have been your last one? Would you have walked away at that point?
I probably would have been done. Yeah. I would have felt good to walk away from the sport. The only reason I'm fighting again is to fight a guy that beat me, and I beat him. That's it. I love to compete, and I don't want to finish like this. That's it. Because even if I go and lose to him again, at least I will fight my fight and see if that's enough. If he's still good enough to beat me in that, under those terms, then it is what it is. I've lost before. I've lost a lot of times. I've lost hundreds of wrestling matches. You know, sometimes I'm just not as good, and I can deal with that. But at least let me give my best. Let me put my best effort forth, and let's see.
And you know,
I saw Stipe's coaches in Vancouver.
Yeah,
and I hadn't seen those guys. I congratulated them, told them great job. You know, like I liked Marcus Marinelli. I know I like his coaches. I think they're great guys. I told him congratulations on getting the job done. I have no hard feelings. I just know that I just want to give my best effort. That's it.
And you know what's going to happen, right? They'll do the trilogy. Let's say you win. All right, one more against John Jones. You know that's coming. Dana White has openly talked about that this is what he's going to offer you. But you're saying for sure there's only one left.
At this moment, you know, I'm fighting Stipe Miocic, and that's it for me. I mean, I don't know what – I don't know how they convinced me to stick around. I know that I want to go fight Stipe and beat Stipe again. I want to do that. I want to do it right. I want to make my – I want to go up there and just do what I'm supposed to do, fight the way I'm supposed to fight, and get my hand raised. And if I don't again, as long as I fight my fight and I fight the way that I know I'm capable of fighting, I'm good with it.
And so here's my big question. You said you fought emotionally, too emotionally in that second fight. Considering now that you've lost to him and considering everything that you've been dealing with your father, how are you going to avoid not fighting emotionally, considering that it's the retirement fight? Like, there's a lot now going into this one.
Listen, what I was going through, nothing could ever match that, you know? Nothing could ever be worse than what we dealt with as a family. So I don't worry about that. And plus, like, what are you going to do? The same thing again? Instead of lose again? I mean, what does that do for you? Try to do better. That's all you can do is try to do better. I try to give these lessons to all these young men and women that I coach that I need to try to live by now as I chase this potential third fight.
We found out after the fight. I didn't know this. I don't think many people knew it. He doesn't really talk a lot. Did you know that his father was also dealing with cancer as well going into that fight?
No, I did.
It's pretty. It's crazy, right?
That's a rough one. I don't like to think about that too much.
Okay.
I don't like to think about that too much because I'm so happy that him and his family don't have to go through that. I'm so happy that they don't. I really am. I don't want anybody to go through what we went through. But that's a weird one. Very, very odd. Very weird.
How is your body feeling after this? You know, you had the back issue. You know, you had the hand issue. Like, you know, you're 40 years old now. How are you feeling? Are you up for another training camp?
Part of the reason I would like to go sooner than later is because I feel great. Mm. You know, like, I don't feel as if I'm run down or anything. I didn't hurt myself in the fight. I didn't hurt myself in the camp. Like, I just feel good. And it would be better to just get rolling right away. It would feel better to just get rolling right away.
Will you do anything differently as far as training? Or are you sticking with the same guys in the same spot with the same kind of game plan?
You know, I think my coaches did a great job of getting me prepared. I just didn't execute. It's on me. You know, it's very simple, too. Could you watch a guy in Khabib just execute the game plan that was put out in front of him and look at how well he fought? You know, it's a matter of executing things that you are training with your coaches. My coaches had me prepared. But there are subtle changes. You know, I'll spend more time with my strength and conditioning coach. This guy, Kerry McCoy, was a two-time Olympian. He was the head coach at Stanford, head coach at the University of Maryland. He's going to come down and really oversee the wrestling portion of my training camp. A guy that I've known since I was on the Olympic team, and he has no problem saying, hey, do this better or do this different. He's just a real voice, a true voice that I can he will tell me everything I need to hear in the wrestling department. You know, I've got guys that really speak truth to me. Rosendo does, Bob does, Hav does. But it will be good to have that calming voice from that I've known all the way back to 2000. He's one of the most high-level wrestlers we have in the country to really oversee what I'm doing in that aspect of my game.
Will you watch the whole fight in its entirety before the third one, or do you have no interest?
I will.
Okay.
I will. I think when I do, it'll be a matter of accepting everything that happened. I think it would be a massive mistake if I didn't watch it. But I will at some point. I will, and I will find the things that I did well and the things that I did bad. You know, and there were a lot of things I did bad. First thing, I got to respect this guy. You know, I got to respect him. And it's great to land that at this insane percentage of strikes, but let's do a lot less of them, I guess.
Mm. And I was surprised that you went to Vancouver. What was that like, being back so soon, working at a fight, being around other people? You just mentioned seeing Stipe's team, but was it tough to be back so soon, or did it actually help lead you to this decision, like missing it again?
It wasn't even about missing the fighting. It was kind of getting your head out of the hole, you know? You stick your head in the hole and you just kind of mourn everything that you're going through. And again, you know, I had scheduled to work a month after my fight. And what did I tell you before? What do men do? Men do what they're supposed to do. And that's what I did. You know, I went to work and I called the fights and I came home. You know, every day I'm surrounded by people that love me dearly. My wife is an angel. She loves me so completely. And she's helping me get through all this. And eventually, you know, it always gets better. You know, so that's kind of how I feel right now. You know, I feel much better than I did a few weeks ago. You know, I've spoken to you personally and you know it was not good, you know, but I feel better today than I did a while back.
So for those that missed it, Daniel Cormier moments ago said that he is ready and willing to return for one last fight. It will be against Stipe Miocic. He wants that fight. He wants that third crack, but that's it after that. He wants to right that wrong and is ready as soon as December 14th. That is tremendously exciting. A lot of exciting things happening in your life. The Saints got back on track. Your guy Drew Brees is out. Teddy Bridgewater, Drew who? No big deal. Mini DC is doing his thing. Deron Wynn, October 18th. Yeah. Kyle Crutchmer just got signed by Bellator. Going to make his debut. A lot of exciting things. But dare I say, this clip right here to me is the most exciting of them all. Look at Dan Dan himself. Oh. Look at this man. He gets shoved by 33. What? Who you step into, my man? Who you step into? Oh, yeah, I'm feeling myself. I'm good. I'm clap. What? Who's 33 going to step to Dan Dan like that? What do you feel when you see your son act like that? Like a little swag, a little pep in his step, and then gets pushed and then steps to him. What does that feel like to see that?
I think, who is this? Like, who is this? Like, it's my boy. You know, like, he's out of his mind, you know. It's great, man. All you ever want is a boy's boy, a tough little boy that is, you know, I like his swag when he got up. He amazes me every day and everything he does. My daughter just had this fantastic, these just unbelievable performances at the gymnastics competition a couple weeks ago. It's just so crazy, like, watching my children grow into themselves, you know, and watching Daniel on that football field, man, he loves it, Ariel. He loves the contact. He loves the tackles. But it's not just him. I got like five wrestlers on the football team. You know, I've got these clips of them all making these great plays. Jose Telez, Bradley Cagle, Liam Leyva, Daniel. They're all just like making these fantastic tackles. And it's like watching those kids do so well. But watching little Dan get up there after he makes a play. You know what I love? The celebration's not big, right? He's going to clap himself and walk back to the huddle. And then 33 kind of gave him the shoulder bump. That was so funny. It's great. All right. Those things make me so happy. Those are the things that get you through the tough things. You know, like I went to Kiki's gymnastics and I hadn't been for a while and she round off and does a complete backflip. I called her mom immediately. Like, when did this start happening? And she's like, you haven't been for a while, but I watch him in there just making me so proud, man. I'm so happy and so proud of what my kids are becoming.
And on top of all of that, beginning September 28th on the platform that I built, ESPN Plus, which I'm now sharing with the likes of you and Chael and others. New episode of Detail featuring Israel Adesanya. How about this little graphic right there? The Last Stylebender, awesome. September 28th. Of course, just days before his title fight against Robert Whittaker. You like doing this? Are you enjoying it?
I love Detail. It's so fun, and it's so great to be able to watch the fights with from a different perspective and just truly explain it to people what's happening in mixed martial arts. Now, I can give you terminology that you will never understand, but I want to explain this to the next fighter that wants to be me, that wants to win two championships in the UFC or championships in other places. I want to be able to tell them, these are the things that you need to be taking from this guy and then this guy and this guy and this guy to try to build yourself into the fighter that you aspire to be. It's great. And the most beautiful thing about Detail is if people say, well, to the masses, this guy's better, or this guy's better. Well, this show's not necessarily for you. This show is for the guy that wants to be a world champion. And that's what I love most about Kobe and his brain. You know, Kobe, his mind is like, don't worry about what people think. Worry about that kid that's 0-0, that's 1-0, and 2-0, and 3-0. And that kid says, you know what, DC does this so good. But also, if I can explain to that kid, hey, fight like Israel in this sense, or fight like Conor or Habib in this sense, that's when I'm doing my job in regards to Detail, you know? Fans love it, that's great. That means that's lanyard, that's icing on the cake, that's extra. That's just a little bit extra. But it's for that guy, you know? It's for that guy that wants to fight and become a world champion to watch and take from it.
Any final message to Stipe?
Good, you know, I hope your recovery goes well, you know, and I'm glad you got your moment. It's weird to see someone that worked so hard be rewarded, especially when it's at your expense. But I don't like that he had his moment at me having to go through what I went through in terms of the sadness of losing the title. So I want to get that back. But we run it back, you know, a true heavyweight rivalry will carry a sport. And I think right now we have that with Stipe and I. And I intend to go back and get the job done and fight in the way that I've been trained to fight. The way that has made me so successful over the course of my career.
And hopefully for your sake, we're staying away from Anaheim this time.
Hey, when I left the Honda Center the next morning, I'm driving to the bus. And like everybody in the car is just holding up the bird towards the Honda Center, like, get you Honda Center. What a horrible place. The Honda Center is so bad. I told my boss at TV, I'm not even calling fights there anymore because I may walk to the octagon and fall and break my freaking ankle or something. That is the big, you know, Selena actually told me not to go back there. She goes, don't go back, babe. Don't fight there. She's Puerto Rican, you know, they're as superstitious as we are in Louisiana. And I said, I'm going to break it. I'm going to do it. It does not matter. And she goes, please don't go back to Southern California. It's just too much. And I didn't listen. They say you should always listen to your wife. And I should have listened. I learned my lesson now.
Well, you are listening to her this time. You are coming back. Thank you so much, as always, DC. We have talked about a lot of things. Thanks for doing this on this show. Thanks for talking to us first. Appreciate it, and hopefully you get that fight sooner rather than later, my man. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it, man. Talk to you soon.
All right, there he is, the one and only Daniel Cormier. Will that Trilogy fight happen December 14th? We shall find out. It is certainly interesting, and there you have it. He is coming back. He has one more fight in him. He wants to fight Stipe. He wants that Trilogy fight. And now let's see if they get it done sooner rather than later. I'm told Stipe's dealing with some injuries right now, and the UFC would like for it to happen on December 14th. Let us see. Interesting stuff, fascinating stuff from the always candid, the always open and authentic Daniel Cormier. All right, so let's end on this. We go from Daniel Cormier to perhaps the hottest fighter in the sport today. Jorge Masvidal is in fuego, as I said, on Saturday. He could do no wrong. Last week he was in New York. I had a chance to sit down with him at the Seaport Studios in New York City where they filmed Get Up. We went face to face, toe to toe. We were sitting in the same room this time, and we spoke a lot about his past, a lot of things that I didn't know about, about the rise, the come up of one Jorge Masvidal. Here's my conversation with the man who will meet Nathan Diaz on November 2nd at Madison Square Garden.
November 2nd, Madison Square Garden, UFC 244, one of the most anticipated fights in MMA history. This man, Jorge Masvidal, against Nathan Diaz for the BMF title. How are you, sir?
I'm great, Ariel.
Often you're dodging me. You're saying that you're going to do my show. You don't show up. You're saying you're going to be on camera. You do it on the phone. Now I got you in person, finally.
You know I love you, man. I just, from the world itself, I stay, you know, isolated from.
Yes.
But I love you, man. If not, I wouldn't be here, man.
I appreciate that. You know what I can't stop thinking about? As I say, November 2nd, UFC 244. I think about that as well. We'll get to that in a second. You've been doing this 16 years. 45 pro fights going into this year. How the hell did this happen? Going into this year, your last fight, you didn't fight in 2018. So you didn't have a lot of momentum. You know, you were out doing the reality show. Your last fight was at MSG.
Yep.
Not even close to the main event.
Not even close.
Lost that fight. If you would have told me that night, Jorge Masvidal in a year and a half is going to be main eventing MSG in one of the biggest fights of all time, I wouldn't have believed you. Would you have believed you?
That game bird wouldn't have believed you, but that game bird's no longer with us. That guy got buried a long time ago. It's this guy right here, you know. So that guy wouldn't believe you. This guy knows that what's going to happen on November 2nd, you know.
How'd you get rid of that guy?
We had to catch a body. He's no longer with us, you know. But something rose better. I just had to shut down a lot of negative programming, a lot of things in my life, and just my outlook on certain things, you know, that had to change. And with that's come the success that I got now in a lot of ways, you know. Also, like you said, I've been doing this for 16 years, so I got a lot of tools people don't know of. I've been sharpening tools a lifetime, you know. I got more than 16 years in this sport. Just 16 years pro. I've been doing it amateur for some time, too. So it's just literally a lifelong journey for me, you know.
When you say negative things, like what?
Let's say anything could be negative. Like, my pantry was always filled with candy because I got kids. Or not candy, you know, like the snacks and stuff. Well, snap. No more veggies and fruits for everybody then if there's even a temptation of me falling in there. That's not what happens because the pantry's still filled with snacks. But it's much like life. A lot of those negative things are in the pantry. I've removed them out of my life. I won't get into too much detail, but there's a lot of things that are not part of my life, you know?
Okay. So that night, like when you lose to Wonderboy, do you recall a moment where you're like, I need to make some changes here because I'm wasting my career?
That definitely, I need to make some changes, but do we got time? Because
absolutely,
like
we got time, Doc.
Okay, if we got time, well.
Let's go. This guy was telling me before the interview, you better come with the hot stuff. I don't usually come.
Right, we're going to warm up. We're warming up. You're still in the warm up.
Okay.
I get it. Some time passed in the fight. You know, obviously I'm heartbroken because I lost the fight. I really wanted to win against Wonderboy. And I can't get a fight at the time. Also, I got some injuries. So I told my manager, I'm going to nurse some of my injuries that I got, fix up a couple things, and then get back to it. During that process, maybe 6 months passed by. I'm ready to compete. Let's go. He's telling me, okay, let me get you a fight. Some time passes by. He gives me a call. And my manager's really good at trolling. I don't know if everybody knows what this means. So after putting me on numerous trolls, he calls me and I go, hey, what's up? And he goes, hey, man, I got this reality show for you. I go, awesome. I'm not in the mood for the troll today.
Right.
Some time passes. He calls back. He has the same proposition on the table. I go, but I want to fight. I don't want to be on the real world or none of that crap. I want to compete. You know, hey, man, I can't get you a fight right now. Nobody's really wanting to fight. You know, this gig's getting sweeter and sweeter. The more you say no, go there for a couple weeks. See what happens. Ends up being that I go for the show 13 weeks and there's no phone, no radio, no TV. I've said it numerous times, but this is kind of how I got to find out exactly what I had to do. It sounds as corny as it may be, but being out from away from everybody just by myself, I got to find me. I got to just listen to my voice, not a million different opinions or some stupid song on the radio or anything. I just got to hear my own voice and what I want done in my life before I close the chapter on fighting. And these are some of the things that I wanted done in my life. I'm still nowhere near where I have to get at, but I'm pointing in the right direction. My mind, body, and spirit is pointed towards the right direction for a long time in my life and my career. So these last 4 years that I got, it's going to be a roller coaster for everybody watching. I'm going to snatch everybody's soul. Every time I fight, I love people going, when I fight, you know, that I just took their breath away. I love that feeling, so these last 4 years are gonna be they're gonna be something wild, man.
So in the end, the reality show almost saved your career.
Saved my career, saved myself. Not the reality show, because I could have found this in,
but it helped.
God forbid, in jail, you know. Right. Just having that who am I moment, that constantly being with myself, finding out, hearing my voice, making a detailed plan of what I'm gonna do with what's left of my career, you know.
So even though you saw the light, so to speak, and you had the plan, to see where you're at now, to see the kind of year that you've had, first the Till fight, which, let's be honest, going into that fight, you know, it was a fight, but we didn't expect this explosion. Then, of course, what happened in July, and now what's happening in November. Is there a part of you that's like, damn, I can't believe it's actually happening? Like, I'm finally fulfilling these dreams that I had?
No, I'm kind of mad at myself. It took so long. So is my good friend and manager, because he knows, you know, that I had the capabilities. But I told him at the start of this year, I also told Dan Lambert, Richie Puma, because you got to have witnesses, man. I just don't be calling stuff in there. Everything I've done this year, I've almost called it to a T.
Really?
Almost called it to a T. To the few close to me that have been there, general manager from American Top Team, Richie Puma, Dan Lambert, the owner, and my manager, along with my coaches, I've been calling a lot of the plays way before they get done. So they're like, and I'm telling them, I'm just like, I told you so, you know? So we got big plans for November 2nd, huge plans.
So have you called things that we haven't seen? Like, are there other things that you called that we haven't seen come to fruition yet?
Yeah.
Like what? A couple of them.
I'm not a prophet, but, man, I've been spot on with a couple of things. I can't get into detail of some of them. I might get assassinated.
Why?
Okay, the higher-ups are going to hear that I got this type of brain power. They're going to want me killed, man.
Okay, but there are other things. Like, it doesn't just end with November 2nd.
Yeah, there's a couple other things. November 2nd is a gift to the world.
Right. So you had probably a feeling that Nate was going to, since you've been foreseeing this stuff.
I wasn't sure on the Nate thing if it was going to happen. And I thought, obviously, it's a strong possibility. Nate, for starters, is a fighter more than anything. You know, I know he's chasing the money just like me, but that guy wants the fights to get him out of bed with motivation to hit that heavy bag. I'm that guy. You know why? Not because I'm the funniest or the best looking or nothing. No, it's simply because I'm going to come to kill you if I have the chance. And anybody fighting me knows that. So if that's not motivating enough, I don't know what is, you know. With that being said, this fight, man, is just, it speaks to me, man.
Speaks to your soul.
Yeah, right now I'm pretty hyped, man. I could go run like 5 miles or hit the bag right now. I'm pretty like.
So where did the change come? Because there was a time where you were getting split decision, unanimous decision. You were losing the close ones. Mm. Now you're like 5 seconds, don't blink, knocking out Darren Till. Do you feel like you've changed as a fighter as well?
Oh, definitely, definitely.
You're more aggressive?
Not just that, but I like reverse engineered my whole career numerous times, but never in depth like I did this last time when I was in isolation under the stars, just me, God, and the universe. And I'd seen every one of my decision losses in my head and went back. How could I have won that decision? I was my first answer. And then I immediately killed that person and thought and said, why the hell would I look for a way to outpoint a guy that should be ending them? Like, make a math formula so there's no judges involved. And that's all I've been trying to do, and that's all I'm going to do with what's left of my career. Like you said, I am the poster boy for split decisions. I have the most split decision losses in the UFC currently right now. It's not something that I'm proud of, but it's true. So taking that into consideration, I had to be like, man, no matter what happens, I'm not going to be known for that. Whether I had won those split decisions or lost them, I wouldn't want to be that guy anyways, that I was in such narrow competition. There's a lot of fights I feel I've been robbed terribly in, but it's just like, man, I got to figure out the formula to execute these guys. Because when great sportsmen, when they're triple teaming a great player, let's say Michael Jordan, he finds a way to win. He finds a way to get those buckets. So I got to find a way not to get to decisions. I got to find a way to eliminate the opposition, separate myself from the pack, baptize these people so they're in outer orbit. And when they come back, there's no questions of who the better man is, you know, and that's all I'm trying to do, separate myself from the pack.
So you mentioned something about, you know, when you were at the reality show and you kind of had a chance to speak to yourself, but it could have really been anywhere. You said something that kind of stuck with me. You said it could have been in jail. God forbid.
Yeah. I said the term jail because they removed music, TV.
Sure.
And a lot of things from it. Not that I'm going in that direction.
No.
I'm not in any way, shape,
or
form.
But I think a lot of people don't know this. You have spent time in jail.
Yeah, I think we need to talk about that.
Why not?
We'll skip that one.
I'm just curious, why did you go to jail?
So just being a dumb kid, letting my surroundings maybe You know, a lot of things growing up that weren't the best decisions. Some of them, you know, I don't regret because it was like maybe I was in fear for my life, you know, type things, and I did certain things. And whatever, it's part of my journey, my history, right. You know. I'm not encouraging nobody to do any illegal activities, nothing based off my history. But it's what I had to go through to get here, you know. Feel a little something, so when I get here, I'm unshakable, unmovable. There's nothing that fazes me nowadays, you know.
How old were you?
When you went to Disney World the first time? Or?
No. The other Disney, the complete opposite.
And those are rumors that I went to jail. That might not even be true, man.
You don't want to talk about it?
Skip.
Okay. Can I ask about your father?
Yeah.
He has been to jail as well.
Yeah, well, he's a very strong instrument in my life and my career. I grew up visiting him in the penitentiary since
a
very
young age. Why did he go to jail?
For drug charges.
Okay.
And his first sentence was 22 years. He did about 18 of those years. So I grew up visiting him in there. And
18 years straight?
18 years straight.
Wow.
Yeah. 18 and some change, because then after that, he's not American, so he's Cuban, so he doesn't get deported, so he's in another type of system for like another year. So really did a little bit more than that. But through this whole process, I grew up with him. I was in this setting. He would tell me things that from that side of the world don't even know, from that dark underground world and how not to get there. And he would just lecture my mind of, once you get here, my son, this is quicksand. You're not going to do anything in life. You're not going to get a job. You're not going to any. So it was very ingrained in me, going in the system, seeing how messed up it is, and then hearing it from him not to end up there. So I got to thank my dad, you know, because if it wasn't for him, who knows, maybe I would have done some of the dumber things in life that I said, no, I'm not going to be a part of it. I'm just going to spend my Friday nights at the gym and get better at my technique. And 16 years later, I'm here, man.
But when you were getting in trouble, did he get mad at you? Like, was he like, son, I'm disappointed. I tried to tell you. I tried to warn you.
Yeah, for a fact, man.
It's hard when your dad says always, that, right?
Yeah, he's always been like a best friend to me. So him just saying, like, just giving me like a head shrug, like, I can remember being young and visiting him, and then he found out I got into some type of trouble. And him just giving me like one of these, it would kill me. You know?
Right.
He didn't have to hit me. He didn't have to scream at me or nothing. So he definitely helped guide me away from anything negative.
And so when he got out after 18 years, has he been cool since?
He's been good. He's a stand-up citizen, man.
What does he do now?
He works for me. We work together a lot of the times. He has a couple other little businesses. But his life, my life is like a walk in the park compared to his. This gentleman really had a for real hard life. He came from Cuba at the age of 14. He stole a tire from a tractor, turned it into a raft. Him, his best friend at the time, and his uncle's best friend, none of them were sea merchants or none of that. They just said, we don't want to be told what our favorite color is going to be or what to watch on TV. So they left Cuba.
They defected.
And they ended up somewhere either in the Bahamas or the Virgin Islands, I forget. And from there, they got extracted to the USA. So my dad was 14 at the time. And all he knows is just street life from that time on.
Because
he was in Section 8 housing, project housing. He was in the worst neighborhoods possible with no guidance whatsoever. So his life is something that was so impactful to me just to hear it. Like, man, good thing I don't got to go through all that, and you're here to guide me. You know, that's the reason why I'm here a lot of the times, you know.
So he's from Cuba. Your mom's from Peru.
Yes, man.
Where did they meet?
They met in Miami, Florida.
Okay. And her life may be a little calmer than his?
Yeah, until he meets him and then has this.
Oh, you know, what happened?
And it gets all... Well, my mom only had one child, and she said after you, there'd be no more kids ever again coming out of my womb. This is what she said, just for the fact that one might come out being half of you, you know?
Why?
I wasn't invited to birthday parties until I was like 14 years old, because I'm wild, man. I just have a lot of energy. It's tough for me to sit here this long, you know?
Right now?
Yeah. I really want to like get moving and do something, you know?
Okay.
I was very hyperactive as a kid, beyond over the top, you know? As you could tell, a little bit mischievous, you know?
Sure. So, yeah. You were a troublemaker.
Yeah.
Okay.
Since an early age, yeah, an insane amount of energy mixed with like bad intentions.
Okay. In school, you'd get in trouble as well?
Yeah. Not always for like fighting and stuff, but I don't know. Maybe I broke something or something crazy, or I disappeared for like a week and then I came back, you know, so I was a handful for my mother.
And did she end up having more kids?
No way.
One and done, really?
One and done. She brags about it, you know. I wasn't taken to, like family birthday parties. I wasn't allowed to, like, 13, 14 years old. So they thought I was civilized enough to get reintegrated in the group again.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you were really excluded from everyone?
A little bit, yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah.
14?
Yeah.
I would think like maybe like
12,
4 or
13,
five.
They started already letting go. From like the period of like 6 to like, I don't know how long, there was like, yo, you got to control that animal when you bring him around, you know?
Are your parents still together?
No, no, they haven't been together for ages.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, what happened? Just kind of...
Well, I mean, just imagine, just an 18-year trial, I think, was long enough. I don't know how...
They were married at the time.
They were married at the time when he went in. I don't know how in love they were with each other or not at the moment, because there's different sides to the story.
Sure.
But I don't know. I don't know if it would have lasted if he had not gone in there or not. I have no idea.
Are you close with your mom now?
We're cool. We're super cool.
Because I know you're very close to your dad.
Yeah, my pops is like my best friend. Me and my mom's is super cool. But my pops is like my best friend. So you see him a lot with me. But I got a lot of love and admiration for my mom. She busted her butt to get me where I'm at numerous times. She was working. She had a full-time job at this dollar rental car place. And she had a part-time job. Then at night, I remember she used to pack up like necklaces.
Okay.
Like she'd make necklaces all night long. And I would wake up like at 2 a.m. as a kid and see her working. And I'd be like, man, she just left to work, came back from work, and is still working right now to make ends meet. And those type of visuals installed a work ethic that you could go to the greatest gym in the world, American Top Team, and ask any of the coaches there who's got the best work ethic or one of the best work ethics, and they'll tell you that's me, man. I don't pull that knee off because I'm just so talented. No, I rep that knee more than any human being walking this earth. I'm in there every day getting after my repetitions, my running, my sprints, my swimming, whatever it is that I got to do, I'm out working everybody in that room. And a big part of that is because of my mother. The work ethic that I saw that she had, it was insane to me, you know, and I was at a young age and this impacted me, you know, so that's how strong of a work ethic that immigrant mentality, they say now, it's like trendy to say, but it's true, you know, she came over with a work drive and then when my dad went away, she had to turn it up even more, you know.
When you're going through sort of that uncertainty with your dad away and you get into fighting around 14, right? That's when you start dabbling with it?
Yeah, like 13, 14 years old, I really start, trying to train at places. I started training since young, maybe like 4 or 5 years old. My dad tells me, but my mom used to, it was a conflict of interest. My dad was like, yes, put him in there. He could burn the nervous energy, all that craziness he has. We'll stick him in there 2-3 hours a day. He's going to come back a better human being. My mom's like, you're going to make him more aggressive. This is going to make him worse. So it was always like that turbulence. If I do bad in school, they'd take me out of the sport. Now I was really like, I needed that outlet, and that was my outlet. That was, as crazy as it sounds, growing up, especially, the gym where people are trying to rip your head off was right. My safe zone. Always, man. It was, if I had a bad day, if I didn't get to eat for whatever reason, if anything happened, if I go to the gym, that was my safe zone. So I've always looked at the gym as like my temple, you know, like my place of peace. As crazy and as weird as that sounds.
What kind of house did you grow up in?
Well, I grew up in different houses, many apartments, houses, everywhere, man. I lived in many places.
Why'd you move around so much?
Good question. I don't know, but we moved around a lot, you know.
Was it ever in like some tough places where?
Yeah, I've been in some good places. I've been in some rougher places. Man, I slept in my car for like 4 or 5 months before I got a couple pro fights.
Really?
Had some cash.
Used that in your car?
Yeah. Slept in the car in the parking lot. Slept at gyms for a long time under the ring.
Under the ring?
Yeah, for a while too, you know. For like a good 2 months, and then bouncing from couch to couch, and I was able to afford a car because I want to fight. I got another place to sleep, and I got AC. I'm set, you know. That's the type of individual I am. I didn't let nothing stop me since a young age. I didn't care if I had a house or if I had the right gear or not. I just make it to the gym because it was my safe zone. It didn't matter where I slept. It didn't matter what I was doing. If I could just get to the gym and space off those 3-4 hours, I was like a kid all over again, you know, and I've done that throughout my whole life, and it happens to pay off now, you know.
When you're sleeping in your car, when you're essentially homeless, are people trying to mess with you? Because you're out at, like, you're in the middle of nowhere sleeping.
Maybe like one or two instances. I always park somewhere safe.
Okay. You ever have any situations where someone tried to rob you, come up on you?
This one car that I was in, they tried to tow it while I was in the car. So
wow.
I just literally hear like click, click, and I think I'm getting robbed. And they're like hooking all the things up. They didn't see me in the back sleeping through the tents. So I got out of the car, obviously, ready to kill somebody. And they're like, whoa, snap, sorry about that, you know. And they unhooked the car and stuff, you know. But that's about it, you know.
When you're in these moments, you're not thinking to yourself like, man, what is this going to lead to? At some point, am I ever going to break through here? Or am I just going to be the guy who's jumping from place to place, living from place to place? Like, at some point, you want to be a prize fighter, right? You ever have moments of doubt where you're like, maybe I just took the wrong path? This isn't going to lead to anything, any money?
There's a couple of those split decision losses, those losses where I go, wow, damn, this hurts, man. I put in so much into this, my whole life into this camp, into this actual fight. And then you hear something like 30, one judge, 27 for him, then the other judge is 30, 27 for me, and then the other judge is 29, 28 for him. Yeah. So it leaves you like lopsided. Then you go online and you go, man, Ariel said I won the fight. So-and-so said I won the fight. The whole press online says I win the fight. And it puts you in those weird things, you know, and you could go many different routes. The world is against me, or I had an affair with somebody's daughter that's a judge and now they freaking hate me. You could do all these things. And you got to kind of be a little cheesy and be like, man, I got to find the most positive way and the least resistance to my success, you know. And that was just end these guys. I just got to finish them. I'm going to get better. I kept telling myself, I know I could do this. I'm going to get better. It's just a matter of time before everything falls into place, you know. Still, everything hasn't fallen into place yet, but it will soon.
Have you ever been back to Cuba with your dad?
No, haven't been. I mean, he's not really... Like, he couldn't go and come back. He can't leave the country.
Because he defected?
No, that too, but also he's, like in the U.S., they don't deport Cubans because, we have that embargo treatment, you know? Sometimes they still do, but he can't leave the country and then come back into the USA. If he leaves, he has to stay gone.
Okay.
You know, yeah.
When you see Nate, do you see yourself in him?
In some aspects, yeah. I see another Latin kid that, man, this was his way out, you know, the way to generate money, to generate income, and not do nothing crazy, you know. Maybe we come from similar neighborhoods or upbringing, you know. So you could see that trauma when he fights, that he's willing to push through the pain, the fatigue like a dog. It doesn't matter to him, you know.
When you were coming up, was that a fight that you were like, man, or maybe even his brother? Because it feels like it was his brother for the longest time. You're like, these are the kinds of guys that I want to test myself again. I respect these guys.
Yeah, either one of them. You know, I fought Melendez a long time ago. So I knew about all these guys. Obviously, Nick was fighting with me at Strikeforce. He was a 70-pound champ. I was at 155. Nate was at 55, but in the UFC. Then when I came over, Nate went up, and then... You know, as I went up, he went down, and it was kind of weird. So I didn't really think that that those fights were going to materialize with the Diaz brothers, but I always wanted them because I just knew, like, man, the day we fight, it's going to be a fight, man. It's going to be somebody that the fans are going to remember. People will remember that day in their calendar. They'll mark it down. If you're an MMA fan, you're going to know about that day because you're getting what you want, a fight. You know, guys that ain't going to quit, that are going to give it their all, push themselves to the brink.
I'm sorry for harping on this, but I can't get over it. Your journey is so unexpected in the sense that in the fight game, if you've been fighting for 16 years, especially if you consider boxing, let's be honest, double-digit losses, not all of them were deserved, but that's what it is. It doesn't happen this late where you just explode. Like, now here you are. You're a mainstream star. I see you with Le Batard. I see you on Get Up. Like, you are a mainstream star. It doesn't usually happen this way. Like, you could have been easily the guy who got submitted by Toby Yamada in one of the craziest submissions. Like, that could have been you, right? That could have been your legacy. Oh, what happened to Jorge Masvidal? Remember the guy who got submitted? And you have somehow overcome all of that.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Like, I would imagine there was a period where you were like, is that going to be me, right?
No, it wasn't, you know.
You never thought that? You never worried about that?
No, I knew for a fact, you know, I knew for a fact without... Life had hit me so much harder than anything you've seen on my pro career. Life at the age of like 12, 13 years old had hit me way harder, choked me out way harder than anything I had come in contact with in the sports world. So I was like, it's just a matter of time. I'm going to bounce back from this. I'm going to take that guy's head off and whoever else they put in front of me. And slowly but surely, I've been getting to that, you know.
When's the last time you saw that Amada submission?
Ooh, maybe, I don't know, like a year or two ago. I remember seeing it. It was just up on a highlight somewhere, and I saw it, and I just looked at it, and it took me back to those memories. Like, damn, you know, I didn't want to attack. I remember feeling it, and I was like, nah, I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to get out.
Embarrassed when you watch it?
Embarrassed, and at the same time, I hold a badge of honor for myself because I know I was close to going out, but the fighter in me, that dog in me, was like, no, we're going to find a way out of here. I didn't find a way out of it that night. That was the first time I was actually in a submission like that. I didn't know none of it. You better believe after that day, I got the best guys that doing that submission because I didn't even know you could get submitted from that position. And man, we drilled it and drilled it and drilled it to the point where if Toby started in that position, I'd feel comfortable to get out, you know? Right. And, it's just the character that I am. I'm kind of like a sociopath with these things. Like I just immerge myself in it and just torment myself till I get good at it, you know?
I feel like, so you said that like you're antsy, you've got a lot of energy, you're fired up, but I feel like you're also somewhat at peace because all this good is happening to you. Witness the fact, I saw a photo of you and Michael Bisping, who I thought would never see eye to eye, hanging out chummy.
Yeah, yeah.
How did you bury the hatchet?
Well, Mike, to me, you know, Mike seems something like small, but he went above and beyond when I was at my fight for Till. Literally, we were in a real tight hall when he had to go this way and I had to go that way. And I was ready for anything, you know. I don't know if this guy's going to come fight me. I don't know if he's just going to say an exchange of words. I didn't know what he was going to do. And all he did is he came up to me, said, "What's up, George?" And he kept walking. This was like a day or two before my fight. Not that he could have thrown me off course, but him not trying to throw me off course showed me a lot of respect for him. Like, I just, you know, besides, obviously, he's a great fighter and stuff. You know, it just showed me, like, man, this dude's a real cool individual because he could have tried to destroy my mindset. And I'm fighting this countryman, you know. And he didn't. And I thought that was real cool. I thought that was from the heart, you know. So, yeah.
So the hatchet has been buried.
Yeah, yeah. After that, we were able to talk and express each other's things. And we had a couple similarities and stuff. So that's also why we kind of butted, you know.
So that warms my heart. I was actually listening. You were in studio on my show back in 2016. I don't know if you remember. You were here to watch the NCAA wrestling tournament. Mm-hmm. And we actually talked a lot. I just listened to the interview again just to remind me of what we talked about. We talked a lot about your roommate, your friend. And the Bisping photo makes me think that this makes me sad that you and Colby are beefing. This makes me sad. You guys were boys. You spoke so highly of him in that interview. I don't know if you remember, but going to Taco Bell late at night.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we me and this individual shared a lot of memories, you know.
Yeah, you guys were real friends.
At some point, I would have considered us real friends. Knowing that he'd take to the internet or online to bash me when I had never bashed him and he just took to bashing it, whether it be for a Facebook like or maybe he's gonna get 10 more pay-per-view buys when we do fight. If you would sell out our friendship like that so quick, we never had a friendship. You know, it was all fake. I thought we had a friendship, but I could see from your end to mine's, we were never cool, man. You were just using me or whatever the hell, you know, sleeping on my couch. Obviously, you already knew who I was. So how would I get Kobe on your show? I'd tell you about my boy Kobe. I'd do it with other radio shows, you know. So I just feel like, man, this dude's a punk, you know. And then to really put the nail in the coffin, ripped off my coach. Didn't pay money. My coach was training him since he's an amateur all the way till he got his title with RDA. And then after that, just ripped him off. When that happened, he died to me, you know. So I really don't like to address him in interviews because nobody the F knows who he is, especially if they're watching me. They want to see pure violence. They don't want to see pure hugging, you know. So none of my fans really know who this dude is, you know. So that'll be the first and last time we address that peasant on this show, man. But I thought we were friends. We never were, you know. If you were, if for a couple dollars you would throw my name under the bus or try to say things, we were never cool, you know.
I'm just because I spoke to Dustin on Monday and he didn't really want to talk about him either. Because I said, like, what would happen if you see him at the gym? And he's like, you'll read about it. And that was pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't foresee any sort of scenario where he could be allowed in the gym. Like, how this is going to tear the gym apart, right? If you and Dustin, two guys who are so respected, isn't that going to be a problem?
Well, you're even skipping the gun before you get to me and Dustin. Why was this guy ever bad mouthing Amanda? You know, one of the greatest fighters ever. She's a chick. You know, like, you don't have no respect for yourself, man. And once he started doing this gimmick, we already started separating ways. Like,
okay,
like the whole hanging out with girls, he doesn't get girls like that. One. Two, when has it become so cool to kiss and tell? Like, he's talking about who he's having affairs with and this and that, and then talking bad about women. Like, man, I met this guy's father. He actually has a dad, man. I'm surprised he acts this way, you know, like a punk, literally, just to get a reaction, just to get this, people talking about him. I can't see eye to eye. I don't care for that because I know who he is in real life. He's not this character he's trying to be in real life, that he's a sex symbol or that he doesn't have no feelings or nothing. He's actually quite the opposite, you know. So it's crazy to see what people will do literally for the dollar. They will sell their soul. And that's part of the reason also it's taken me so long to get here. I've never changed. I've continued to be true to myself. You know that I'm the same person you interviewed 10, 15 years ago. I'm going to continue to be that person. If they like me, cool. If they don't, It is what it is, man, you know, but I ain't selling my soul for the dollar, man.
If you win on November 2nd, life is going to change. When you win, my apologies. When you win on November 2nd, life is going to change.
Don't mess up again.
But has life changed already? Like, do you feel a difference?
Dramatically.
How so?
Life changed dramatically, man. Snap. I heard the saying before that you're last considered a prophet in your own city. Is it something like that?
Okay.
Did they say? That's when I really noticed, when my own city took like a general consensus of me, you know?
Yeah.
Like I said, I've been fighting forever, and it's never been like a big, big thing over there where I can't go out. Now it's like where I can't go out, you know, and it's in my own city. So that's when I knew, like, wow.
People come up to you, want to take pictures.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, it's always happened in California and New York a lot more. Like, if I'm just here randomly, I get a lot more, I guess people are way more educated in MMA in New York, let's say, in California. Or they just get the trends first, you know, because it's in Miami, I've never felt that boom like how it is now. And that's how I knew, like, man, I must have gone to the next tier up, you know?
One thing, it sounds silly, but one thing that I really think helped maybe connect you with the people of Miami is when you said super necessary in that press conference. It's a crazy thing that this has blown up.
I don't know why that's super necessary. I didn't know that super necessary was so Miami.
You didn't know that? Because afterwards, it seems like everyone's like, oh, he's our guy. He said super necessary. And I heard the other one was irregardless that everyone says over there. A word that doesn't really make sense, but people say, do you say irregardless?
I'm sure, man, maybe in the heat of the moment, I do, you know. The super necessary, I mean, I guess people do say that. I don't know.
But you know that blew up, right? Like, that's what the guys on Levitard...
Well, you know, I don't know on the TV.
I know.
I don't really get on the social media much. So I don't know what blows up or doesn't. I just do my thing, and then later on, they're like, hey, good job. I'm like, all right, cool, you know?
So one little word.
Like the three pieces in the soda, you know? I never would have thought it was going to blow up like that, you know, but whatever.
It's a crazy thing, because now I feel like they view you as their guy, 305. Like,
that's what I'm saying, you know, now.
Right.
Now. What were they waiting for? They should have been the first ones there.
So is there a part of you that's like, yo, you guys are Johnny Come Latelys? Now you're going to show me love after 16 years? Right? Is there a part of you that's like, where were you guys back in the day when I was fighting for shark fights?
My boy said it, not me.
Yeah. You feel that way?
Of course, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, just think about it, like, from exposure side. Like, if I was able, if the UFC thought, like, wow, we could get the Miami market with this guy, the UFC would have been pushing me earlier.
Right.
So there is that part of me of, gosh, I wish it would have got behind me sooner. But at the same time, man, God aligns the stars up for a reason, you know, and God's timing's perfect. So he wanted it now, you know, so now it is.
How much are we making for this fight?
We're making.
Good?
We're making. Some people are going to be, not some people. A lot of people are going to be mad when they see this. And I would rather much say a lot of people are going to be happy. Yeah. But seeing how a lot of my coworkers have already been taken to the stuff, when they actually find out these numbers.
What are we talking? Seven figures? Big numbers? Most ever in your career?
That's not fair, man. And then you can't even say nothing, because when you look at my resume, what I've been doing, how long I've been doing, not just forget about the UFC, before coming to the UFC, you know, because you've been covering the sport for ages. Man, I deserve these paychecks and then some.
A long time ago.
A long time ago, my brother.
You're making it for a long time.
On November 2nd, not only am I charging for all this year's work, but it's compound interest, man. It's been building up for a long time. I'm this credit card company that's coming to collect, man. And, man, I got some interest rates to apply. And I'm not somebody you want to owe money to.
And you get pay-per-view points. First time. It's finally coming together.
This guy knows too much.
That's great.
Yes, sir.
Finally.
Woo. It's awesome to be here, you know, to look at that mountain peak and be like, I know I could climb it, push yourself, get to the top, look down and be like, look at all that I did. But I'm looking even higher, man. I got some big, big plans, man. I got some huge plans.
I know you're fighting for this fictitious title, but...
Fictitious?
Well, I'm just...
The company, all its running, has never had a bad mother ever title. It just can't be coincidence that I'm one of the people competing for it. This title is the hardest title out walking the planet, man. They picked two dogs, and that's for a reason. In the history of this company, have you heard them put up a title like that before? Why do you think so, man? Why do you think so,
Because it's well-deserved. But I'm wondering if in those plans, there's a real belt in those plans. Like, will it feel like you fell short if you don't get the actual title at some point, or do you not care about that?
You want me blunt, honest with you?
Please.
I want to take everybody's head that's in the top 10. I want to take their head and their soul with it, man. And if they have some Mickey Mouse title with their waist, I'm going to take that too. I just see my, maybe when I look at other divisions, I can see talent, I can see skill set. But when I look at my division, I just see like, I got my work cut out for me, but every single one of these guys, I'm going to baptize them, man. I'm just going to separate myself from the pack in as much as way, shape, and form as possible. So if there's somebody going out there spreading rumors that they have a belt worth getting for, I'm coming for you. That's it. There's not more to it. I'm coming for your head. And I don't like the he say, she say. We're going to find out the only way that there is, and that's fighting, you know. So whatever they end up doing with the Sissy Fighting Belt Championships on that side, I don't know. But that bad motherfucker belt, that's going to be mine, man. And after that, I'm going to defend it against whoever they deem to defend it against.
Last one. Who's the A side on November 2nd? You or Nate?
You're looking at the A side. You're looking at the A, the Alpha, the everything, man. The Alpha and the Omega's right here in front of you, baby. Why would you ask such questions, man?
I feel like he would have a different answer.
You know the answer to that. Well, we'll see November 2nd who was the Alpha.
I can't wait. Thank you, my man.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate it. Yes, November 2nd, Madison Square Garden, UFC 244. Jorge Masvidal, Nathan Diaz for the BMF title.
So there you have it. I think I've been interviewing Jorge Masvidal for about 10 years. I think the first time was right after the Toby Amada submission loss in Bellator. And I think that was my favorite one. The setting is just amazing in New York over there. Thank you very much to the crew for allowing us to do the interview there. The Get Up Studio, that little nook is amazing. But just great insight into who this man is, how far he has come. This doesn't happen in combat sports. You don't fight for 16 years and have 47 pro fights and then blow up. It doesn't happen. Headline MSG doesn't happen. And so this is such a unique story. And I mean, it's just wonderful to see these two guys in particular who are sort of mirror images of each other from very different parts of the country coming together to headline this show in less than 2 months' time. I want to thank everyone who tuned in. I also want to note that December 14th card very much in flux, and don't count out the Irishman. Don't count him out. I think the fact that they put two title fights on that card rules him out for that card, but it is imminent and we will see what happens. But I think first quarter of 2020, things are going to happen here, and we're ending the year on a very high note with the card in Melbourne, the MSG card December 14th, and then I think interesting things are to come in the early portion of 2020. We're even talking about the Helwani Knows trophies coming back. All very exciting. What's not exciting? We're off next week. We're off because of Rosh Hashanah. I tried to fight it, but Corporate Jake said he wanted a day off. So, I respect that. You know, we got to honor the new year, but we'll be back in 2 weeks' time. And that will be right after the Melbourne show, but you'll hear from me. I'll do Ariel and the Bad Guy on Wednesday and the MMA reporters and, even the radio show before 2:43. Just this particular show off for a couple weeks, but don't worry. You'll still see a lot of me and you'll still probably be very sick of me by the time we return in 2 weeks. All right, we are out of time. What a fun show this has been. What a memorable show. Great way to go into the bye week, so to speak. Reminds me of the Buffalo Bills, you know, going into Foxborough next week. Are they playing in Foxborough? I don't even know. They're going to win, obviously, but I just don't know if it's going to be a road win or a home game. I don't know. Anyway, it's been a fun one. I want to thank everyone who tuned in. I want to thank everyone who stopped by. I want to thank Vivid Seats for being a proud sponsor of this program. One of the smart ones out there. Thank you very much, Carla Esparza. Congratulations to her on the big win, and hopefully she stays safe in Guatemala. Thank you very much to Jeremy Stevens. Hopefully we'll see that one soon. Very interesting story about what happened yesterday at the hotel. Thank you very much to Leon Edwards. Great stuff from him. Interesting times as well. Great to catch up with Martin Kampman. Good luck to him and Mark Madsen on Saturday. Great to have the one and only Joey Diaz on the program. Thank you very much to him. All the best to Jack Hermanson this Saturday, main event, Copenhagen. Good luck to him against Jared Cannonier. Thank you very much to Daniel Cormier. Welcome back. That was phenomenal stuff. And of course, thank you very much to Jorge Masvidal for sitting down once again. Back in 2 weeks, same time and place. In case you missed anything, check it out. iTunes, Twitter, YouTube, all those places and more. Peace!